evening, brothers and sisters of the League. Coming to you live from TJ's Cigar Lounge in historic downtown McGregor, Texas, it's the Tuesday Night Cigar Club Podcast. Tonight, the boys get all Charlie Rose on us as they do a lengthy sit-down interview with Mike Rosales and Skip Martin of Roma Craft Tobacco. While discussing the ever-changing cigar industry in tonight's film, 2004's Friday Night Lights, the crew and their guests puff away on the outstanding Neanderthal cigar from Roma Craft, while sampling such beers as the Cockeyed Cooper Bourbon Barrel Barley Wine Ale, the Double Pecan Porter, the Black Metal Farmhouse Imperial Stout, the Southern Charred Double Bastard Ale, and many, many more. Uh-oh, I see where this night is headed. Great fucking time. That's where it's headed, folks. So sit back, light them up, and enjoy the show.
I have to mention up front before we started, tonight's film, Friday Night Lights. Tonight's show is going to be very different, which if you're watching on YouTube, you'll get very quickly. If not, listening in, you'll soon learn. I somehow got it confused with Varsity Blues.
Rookie move.
To where, as of just 2 days ago, I was talking to Mincy about the film, and I was describing scenes in Varsity Blues, and he's like...
Yeah, there's no whipped cream in Friday Night Lights.
I thought we
which
were doing,
is a shame.
I thought we were doing Friday Night Lights. I was like, we are. He's like, well, that's you're describing a different movie. And then I realized I'd never seen Friday Night Lights. But it's actually a good thing, because, as Skip pointed out, my plan was to walk in tonight butt-ass naked, wearing nothing but strategically placed whipped cream, and... I'm not sure how David and the staff here would have... you know what? You need a moment? Just let that visual sink in.
No, I'm not sure how I would have handled that.
Fair enough. Welcome, everybody, to the Tuesday Night Cigar Club podcast. Episode 22, I believe. And, boys, it's a special one. We're taking a vacation from our usual top-secret headquarters, deep, deep within Abe Lincoln's forehead on Mount Rushmore, to come to you live from TJ's Cigar Lounge in historic downtown McGregor, Texas. Cody, is it historic?
It is, yes.
I went out on a limb there. I don't know if it's
very historic.
I figure most downtowns in Texas are historic. But we're coming to you live here. We're invited tonight by our special guest, Skip Martin and Mike Rosales of Roma Craft Tobacco. Hey.
I think contractually you have to say Mike's name first.
Right. Yeah. Mike Rosales and Skip Martin of Roma Craft Tobacco were kind enough to ask us to join them here tonight. And cut volume wise, we're good?
We're all good.
Awesome.
Yeah, no, we're good.
Thanks, Dave. Tonight is going to be somewhat of a break in format for us. We actually just. Or they're going to start kicking on tonight's film, so we everyone here at the lounge is going to be watching Friday Night Lights while we talk with Skip. Skip picked tonight's movie, Friday Night Lights, and unlike our usual modus operandi where we go through the film scene by scene and analyze the shit out of it, and 4 hours later we're drunk and
we don't have to skip that whole thing, do we?
We can still
do the 4 hours later.
Yeah. The whole span. I just kind of managed a way to do a little bit different. I'm going to defer, for example, I usually set up our cigar and why it was picked. We actually just got handed our cigar. I'm going to let Skip introduce cigar. Instead of our usual very carefully picked beer to pair, we've got an army of beers from everywhere under the sun.
You say we have a plethora of beers?
I would say it's a plethora of beers that Mike and Skip brought with them. We also got our Twisted X Lager that, you know, I worked so hard, Skip, to go into specs, and I spent like, I don't know, I'm not good at 3 hours trying to find the perfect beer to welcome you back to the States.
And,
like,
yeah.
So we've been wanting to do Twisted X. It's a Texas brewery, and they do a Fuego, jalapeno-infused Pilsner.
I'm good with that. We can do that.
Yeah,
but why limit yourself, right? I mean,
because I look at your food picks and just the godly amount of jalapenos you put on everything.
Well, there's a reason why we're not doing that, Fancy.
But
I've cracked on you enough tonight.
But anyway, Todd accidentally grabbed the wrong beer, so now we're doing Twisted X's Lager, which is refreshing.
It's nice of you to say that, because when you say you accidentally grabbed the wrong beer, it makes it sound like you grabbed the wrong beer from a fridge. No, I grabbed the wrong 5-6 packs of beers.
Well, I think we brought like 70 craft beers. I think we picked about 15 of them out of the car. So
you got some really good choices in here. I noticed the 512 double. I'm looking forward to it.
So as we go through and share these beers, just give them a shout out. One of you guys could just kind of tell us what we're drinking. And we started off with the Cockeyed Cooper. The Cockeyed Cooper. Cody here is our resident beer man. He owns a pub, an Irish pub.
Awesome.
In Temple, Texas, right down the road.
Yeah.
And that's where we
played baseball at UMHB.
Oh,
for a little while. I played like five schools, but that was one of
them. There you go. Well, this you would have liked this pub if it was around back then. You started, what, 8 years ago?
Yes.
No, we had to hide beer back then.
Yeah. UMHB is a little...
they still have to hide beer.
Yeah. the Cockeyed Cooper.
Cockeyed Cooper. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it correctly. Unita Brewery. Or Unita Brewery?
Unita Brewery. I think it is Unita.
So I'm not entirely sure. It's fairly strong. It's about 11.1.
Oh, is that all?
We call that an opener.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's very tasty. I'm not...
An eye-opener. Use that for breakfast.
It's very good. Very good. And as far as the cigar we're smoking with it, Skip, we are smoking the Neanderthal. And I'm going to let you tell our listeners a little bit about it.
Yeah, this is the Neanderthal HN. It's the only core line Neanderthal that's out of the five cigars we have now. It's the only core line in Neanderthal. These cigars actually came with me, you know, on the journey from Esteli yesterday. So they've gone from 85% humidity to zero humidity, pretty quickly. So mine was cracking a little bit at the beginning, but it looks like it's evening out.
Mine evened out instantly. And I always say on the show, relights we don't ever really comment on because we talk so damn much.
Right.
We just attribute it to our big mouths and not a construction. Well, unless like last cigar was.
Yeah.
That became an issue.
So this cigar has seven different tobaccos in it. So it's pretty. It's actually pretty hard to make, and it's also a pretty unique shape. It's very dense. There's a tobacco in there called Pennsylvania Double Ajaro. It's from a Green River Sucker 1 variety of Pennsylvania broadleaf. And they call this tobacco that because it's a regrowth leaf. And so that tobacco has about three times as much nicotine as Esteli Ajaro. Twice to three times as much. So with the FDA's help, we'll know exactly how much pretty soon.
Right.
I'm
gonna get to that later.
So this cigar is really my kind of always refer to it as my master thesis for cigar making, because when I came to making cigars, Mike already had been making cigars in Costa Rica for a while, and I was a cigar smoker. I had a retail shop for a little while, but I wanted to make something like what I smoked, like LaFleur Double Ajaro, Hoya Antano 1970, those kinds of cigars.
One of my all-time favorites.
And when we made Cro-Magnon, we were actually going to call Cro-Magnon Neanderthal, but it just wasn't strong enough. So Cro-Magnon is kind of a more of a cultured...
was that Pennsylvania Ajaro, the missing link? Is that what you were...
Yeah, so I found the tobacco to make it stronger without throwing it completely, out of balance in terms of construction or smoking. So... and then the sweetness from the San Andreas, we found the right kind of San Andreas. A lot of people are using it. I mean, there's nothing new in the cigar world. Since I've been smoking cigars, I actually started smoking cigars right about when this movie came out.
Okay.
A little bit before this movie.
2004-ish?
About 2004, yeah. And so about 21 years. And, it is what it is. Nothing we make, there's no special tobacco, right? My friend Carlos Sanchez always says there's no tobacco from Mars. No one's going to make any new, amazing, invention in cigar making.
Right.
It's just about picking good material, right. Mixing it correctly and making it consistently. And then for us, it's about also delivering it with good value, so at a good price for what you're getting. And this is our most expensive core line cigar. It's $12. Most of our stuff's between $6 and $8.
I was going to say but even at $12, this is
But it costs every bit of that. So I mean, it's a very expensive cigar. It's 2.5 times more expensive than a Cro-Magnon Cranium to make this. So you're getting your money's worth when you smoke it.
Okay, and you mentioned getting started in the cigar shop. You actually had a lounge in Galveston, is that right?
Yeah, I had a little shop in Galveston.
Okay. And then the Hurricane Ike came in. And
right. And then we tried to recreate one of our kind of store private labels, for lack of a better word. That became Cro-Magnon. Mike and I decided to start Roma. And then about 6 months into that, we decided to do it the way we wanted to do it. We really had to own the factory. So then we built Nicosueño. And Esteban Diesla joined us. And, you know, I live in Esteli now. I do, you know, my part in the business. Mike does his part. Esteban does his part. So,
how did you guys hook up?
So, you know, we just lived in Austin. You know, Cigar World is a small place. Even if you're anywhere in the United States, Cigar World is a small place. So, you know, Mike was the only guy I knew that actually was sourcing tobacco to make cigars and had a relationship with a factory. So, you know, I leaned a lot on Mike in terms of, you know, what is the business side of this? Because I knew nothing about making cigars. You know, I mean, now I can tell you, you know, how much the vegetable gum in this cigar cost. You know, where we get it from, three different sources, you know, exactly how to make it, how to put it on the cigar without, you know, screwing it up, how to put it on the label, you know. I mean, there's really no aspect of making cigars that I don't understand at this point, but still learning a lot about tobacco.
What was your impetus to get into the manufacturing side? You know, I'm coming from a filmmaking background. I always like filmmakers who make movies because the movies they want to see, nobody else has made. So they're make, you know, I'll make it myself. Were you not finding a certain something for your palate wasn't out there? Or was it just you became enamored with the process, the world, and you just kind of wanted to be...
Right, so it was kind of two things. One, I mean, first of all, there was plenty of great cigars on the market, and today there's plenty of great cigars. I mean, you can walk into a humidor with 400 different facings, and 385 of them are cigars that you'd love to smoke, you know? I got into the retail shop because I had a house in Galveston and was tired of having to stop in Houston to get cigars. I wanted a shop and a place to watch a football game, and then, you know, after the hurricane, I wanted to recreate another shop. And then the more I thought about it, the more I talked with Mike, you know, Mike was working with a small regional brand and was struggling with a lot of the aspects of the business. And he was very, very good at the piece that he did, that he, you know, as a brand manager, but struggled with, you know, having to do that and the factory side. And so then we said, hey, let's do another brand, but let's do it the right way. You know, let's make a stronger cigar. Let's make a cigar that's well-priced, that's consistent. Let's not come out with a bunch of limited edition stuff. Let's just make a good core cigar.
And I love that. I think we've all been kind of burned out, especially lately on the special edition stuff. The downside is you find a cigar you love, and then you can't get it again.
Yeah. Well, it's like beer. I mean, you know, there's so many beers to choose from. You find, you try to get based on the factory or the brewery, based on how aesthetic the bottle appeals to you, all those things. And then, you know, a lot of them are all great, right? So when you find one that really hits you, like for me, that's Prairie Bomb from Oklahoma. You go out searching for it, and that's like a full-time job trying to find the beer you like. And then the problem with that is it changes over the years. So we want to kind of avoid that stuff in the manufacturing side. And then, you know, the reason why we got into the factory is because even there are a lot of great tobacco people, there's not a lot of people who understand the, you know, the modern processes of manufacturing efficiently and the logistics of it and the supply chain piece of it, you know, just-in-time inventory and those kinds of things. So, you know, my background is as a business person. And basically what I did is kind of the same thing Mike. You know, Mike's never had someone write him a paycheck in his life. I drew a paycheck for a lot of years. But I just wanted to figure out something I love to do and then get so good at it that we can make a living doing it. So that's what we focus on. A lot like craft beer makers, you know?
It's very similar. But, I mean, and that's one of the things, you know, I was kind of telling these guys, because two of these very wise men are not on social media at all, never have been, never will be.
I'm getting there.
I know you are. but I kind of was giving them, you know, because Skip is one of those guys that to follow him now on pretty much on Instagram, you really get to see, you know, cigars from their kind of gestation of an idea to experimenting to, you know, a factory that's been basically crafted from the ground up in Esteli. I mean, it's really just for, it's got, I kind of look at, you know, your stuff on Instagram and watching, like, Sokka, what he's doing now. It's kind of like...
Sokka's copycatting me, by the way.
Is he copycatting you?
Yeah, we've had this discussion.
Okay. We're interviewing him on the 3rd, so...
You know, so I used to argue with Sokka in the mid-90s on a forum called alt.smokers.cigars, and then later on Fujipub, Sokka was a moderator or admin, and I used to argue with him, we'd get into discussions, right. And Sokka's always right, so if you disagree, then it becomes an argument, so... No, but Sokka, even when he was coming down, even still, you know, when he was pursuing the idea, he would come down to SLE. Our factory was always a stop. We'd have a lot of discussions about what he was doing. And, you know, Sokka was an executive at a humongous cigar company, which is a different approach than being a craft cigar maker or a boutique cigar maker, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, Sokka had tons of Facebook followers, but was a typical Facebook guy, right?
Right.
And, you know, I'm sure he took lessons from a lot of people, Huber and a bunch of other people, but, you know, for us, social media is not about marketing. You know, we don't even have a Aromacraft Instagram account. We have a Aromacraft Facebook page where we post reviews and stuff like that, and we have a Aromacraft Twitter, which basically just, you know, copies that content.
That's what started.
But our stuff really, our brand started because... Hey, I'm making a cigar with Mike. You know, I had, you know, 5,000 Twitter followers, and, you know, probably 4,000 of them I recognize their names, you know, because I interacted with them, right? So, and still today, I mean, I meet people, and I'm like, yeah, you know, they know all about me. I love what you had for dinner last week, and
but then they go, you're always putting jalapenos in,
right? But then they say, oh, well, I'm this guy, you know, this.
What do we
want to
do?
Like, even Mike tells me, hey, I was talking to this guy in the store last week, and who was the guy on Instagram, the cop in New York?
Oh, Say Big Poppy.
Yeah, Say Big Poppy, right? So, like, I'm like, oh, well, that, now I know who he is.
Because
he's telling me the handle, right?
Okay.
So, well, yeah, so, but, you know, for us, the social media is about engagement. You know, it's about, you know, I like, we of course we like the photos you post with our stuff, but it's, you know, I also know when you have a baby, when you lose a job, when you get a new job, you know, when your son goes into the Air Force, and to me, that's the cool thing about it. I got into social media because when the hurricane hit the store, the only way I could really get information was through Twitter, because there were people still on the island who were broadcasting on Twitter about what was going on the island. And what I found after the hurricane, what I really almost went into kind of a depression about, was I didn't have this interaction with my customers that I used to have. So then I found all these cigar guys. I got sick of forums a decade before that. But I found all these cigar guys that were just, you know, chill. They weren't like all the forum, you know, groups and that I had gotten kind of tired of. But they were just people who, you know, were living their life. I mean, Jerry Cruz, you know, he had recently lost his son, and then, you know, we kind of saw that whole process, and then we saw the process of having a new baby, Gracie, and then, you know, he had his little blog, and he helped us out. Friend of mine, David Diaz, Doc Stogie Fresh. You know, so these guys who I'm friends with, who I'd known for years, or even new people that we had met, we started engaging with them. So when we came out with the cigar, well, we sold 50,000 of them before anyone ever smoked them, and that really kind of what made our brand what it is. So still to today, we stay true to that, right? Right now, we're building our new headquarters in Austin.
Awesome.
So, you know, we're taking pictures with our architect. You know, this is an idea we have, and this is something, you know, this is being built today. And, you know, when someone visits it for the first time, they will have seen the whole thing being built, and they would have been part of it.
And that's why I want to urge you, you know, we get a lot of listeners that are either new to cigars, or they find us through our film stuff, and all of a sudden, you know, we talk up these cigars so much, they want to kind of dip their toes into cigars. Follow Skip and Mike on Instagram, because it really is the film equivalent of kind of a behind-the-scenes documentary where you can see the inner workings of, I mean, the Nika Sueño facility is just, it's awesome to see kind of what they've done from scratch. And, I mean, just the storage rooms alone just give you a huge cigar boner.
yeah.
Is that a technical term? In the cigar world?
I don't know.
Yes, it is.
I've experienced it, but I don't know what to call it.
Trademark Tuesday Night Cigar Club 2015. Cigar boner.
Hey, if we ever do our own line of smokes.
The boners.
Call them cigar boners.
It'd be like a femur. The boners.
You're going to talk to Lozona about that.
After a long day in the office, I'll have to go home and light up a boner.
Who doesn't?
There was an ad from Davidoff that never saw the light of day. There was an ad agency that pitched this idea of the O-face. And it was all these guys in, like, ecstasy, you know, blowing a smoke circle.
Nice.
And, of course, you know, the stiff suit guys at Davidoff killed that, but I thought it was brilliant. We might do that.
But I think what
show me your O-face.
What I think of watching you guys do, and correct me if I'm wrong, but especially this, it seems like in the last 2 years, maybe, there's been a lot of companies kind of pop up out of nowhere. Do you think, and I keep going back to film, but I just see a lot of comparisons with you. You've got to really love everything involved from the idea to the execution to getting it out to the company. You have to love the process like you love a woman. I mean, you have to be all consumed with it.
I always say I used to make money, and now I make cigars, right? So,
but are you happy?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm living the dream. I mean, honestly, you know, people always ask, you know, what do you think about all these guys coming to the market? Doesn't that annoy you? And I'm like, no, because, A, you know, if we're doing what we're supposed to do, it doesn't affect us.
Right.
And because there's a lot of companies out there that don't do what they're supposed to do, so that's who gets affected, right? I mean, Dan Carr, who recently got fired from General Cigar, great move, by the way, whoever decided that. you know, he was a perfectly nice guy, business guy, some kind of Ivy League background or whatever. But he used to walk around with a list of like, okay, these are tier one companies, these are tier two companies, these are tier three companies. We need to crush the tier three companies, you know. Altadis decided either we're going, you know, years ago, all these little companies, we're either going to buy them or we're just going to buy so much tobacco so they can't make cigars, right? And at the end of the day, if you have an industry where no one else is getting into it, it's a dying industry, right? So the fact that all these new guys get in, they always bring something fresh. Not always, but most of the time they always bring something fresh. And that rejuvenates the industry.
Competition always breaks out.
I feel that way. Competition to me, I'm a competitive person, but the person I compete against is myself.
Yourself,
right?
Yeah.
I don't compete against the guys in the other six lanes. You know, Mike and I are like, okay, we had a 10.2, now we got to get down to 10.18. You know, now we got to get down to 10.16, and so, you know, we're always competing against ourselves and just making good consistent cigars that you can sell at a fair price is a very tough task. And, you know, living in Esteli is not the most exciting place in the world.
Well, I'm going to get to that here in just a little bit.
It's super tranquilo, but you really, I mean, Mike lives in a Hilton or a Hyatt somewhere. Right?
Like us, a top secret.
Yeah, Mike's on the road like 270, 280 days a year. So, you know, you have to love what you're doing to do that.
And I just see that. I see it from the guys that you're like, you know what, they're going to be around. They're going to, you know, I just get a sense some of these newer guys don't know their product, don't know.
Well, if I may.
Sure.
I think we make it look extremely easy. I think a lot of people who've had success actually make it seem really easy. Hey, I go down to Nicaragua, these guys are going to make my cigar, and then, you know, I'll find a couple shops that'll buy it. And, you know, that's a fraction of what really has to happen. I mean, just in the production side, you know, making sure in the logistics side, like, it's really complicated. But it looks, from the outside in, like, it looks super easy.
Yeah, I mean, we're making a cigar right now for a retailer in New York, a good friend of ours, Matul Shah, and Sean, his partner. It's called Fable Cigars. And the first line, the first line's called Fourth Prime. And it's a great cigar. I mean, I've been smoking tons of them in the factory, and I'm really excited about it coming out. I'm proud to put our name on it, and I'm really happy that Sean and Matul are doing it. But, you know, we didn't just blend a cigar and give it to them and say, do what you want to do with it. We take people who are friends, who are good business partners already, like Mike and Greg at Cigar Hustler or Matul and Sean, and we basically take them by the hand and say, okay, if you want to have a cigar, here's what it takes to do it right, and you have to be serious. And then we basically put up a lot of hurdles to prevent them from doing it.
Right.
But in the process, they learn. And, you know, even this last trip, you know, they came back on the same kind of the flight that I did on 2 days ago or yesterday. you know, they said, you know, it's amazing to me how, I mean, he's been in the cigar business since he was born. His dad's had a retail, they have four retail shops in New York. And he says it's unbelievably complicated. And so it is a lot harder than it looks. But at the end of the day, you know, an average Joe, plumber, electrician, bookkeeper, accountant, can walk into a cigar shop where somebody like these guys have built a place that's, you know, anyone would love to hang out in, and who will take, you know, the time and effort to pick the right things to put on the shelf, and you can buy it for $6 and light it up and have a great hour, right? It's just like a movie. I mean,
right,
someone sees how a movie's being made, it's extremely complicated. The thousands of people involved, you know, the grip.
It loses its sexiness very quickly.
When you see the sausage being made, or when you have to make the sausage, it's not as fun eating it.
No.
So.
Or you get to hear Cade yelling at us and just like,
I'm going to yell at you regardless. Yeah. Real quick, before, boys, what do you think of the cigar?
I am loving this.
I'm curious to get Cody's take. Cody's our resident Connecticut, more on the lighter side of things.
Mild to medium.
Is it kicking your ass?
It is not.
There you go.
Surprisingly, every time I see a darker cigar, I'm like,
but be careful, right? So, tobacco cigars are. I always talk them in the sense of beer, and anyone who's ever heard me on a podcast has probably already heard this. But when you have beer, you have body and you have strength.
Correct.
So a stout. Like a Guinness or a Black Metal, like we're going to drink later, that is a very heavy beer. It has a lot of body, has flavor.
Well, we're drinking Black Metal now.
Yeah. So it has a lot of thickness. But the alcohol by volume is what? 11, 10?
It's 10.8.
Yeah, 10%, right? There's an IPA in there that's like 17%,
exactly.
Right? And it's fresh and crisp. So it has a lot of strength, and you really don't feel it until you get to the bottom of the glass.
Right.
And that's the way this Neanderthal is. It's pretty balanced for a super strong cigar.
It's very well balanced.
It has very well-aged tobaccos, but it has a lot of nicotine. So, you know, if you light one of those things up in the morning on the drive to work, you're going to have a buzz by the time you get there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, especially IPAs that have crept up on us. We do usually a 3 or 4 hour podcast. One, we released our new episode 21 today. It's 4 hours, 25 minutes. And we'll stand up at the end of that thing, and if we're lucky enough to stand up. And, they do have a way of, but in the moment, they are exactly what we're kind of looking for.
I'm still focusing on that buzz when you get to work in the morning comment. I'm going to need a lot more of these.
Now, we make the short ones for that.
John, usually you come in here looking suicidal. Now you're just very happy.
That's our local shop, pretty much the knuckle draggers. We've been smoking the hell out of those.
Yeah, and that cigar has a lot of body, but doesn't have a lot of nicotine.
Right.
Yeah.
I was about to say, this is far stronger than the knuckle dragger.
It has a lot more nicotine. I would say it probably has a little less body than Cro-Magnon. This is more of a milk stout, where Cro-Magnon's kind of more of a coffee, chili pepper stout. Yeah.
Okay.
One thing I do love is I'm a big visuals type of person, and I love the smoke profile coming off of this thing. It's just pluming nice.
It does have a Liga-esque smoke. It's pouring out of this thing, which is nice. I want to, real quick, because we talk about this a lot on the show, if I want to read something from y'all's website real quick. Our cigars, tobacco, talent, and time. Our philosophy is simple. Combine quality tobacco, experienced craftsmen, and the right amount of time, and you'll produce great cigars. Never compromise in these areas, and you'll be able to produce great cigars consistently. We poke a lot of fun on the show at the overuse and, we feel, abuse of the word craft and artisan. It gets applied to everything nowadays.
Well,
you can't eat a potato chip without it being an artisan chip.
More so now.
Yeah.
I never heard of a craft cigar until recently. There's a lot of them.
There's a lot of craft cigars.
All cigars are, all premium cigars are craft.
By definition, they're
made by hand.
Skilled craftsmen are making. But you just see that label slap all over the place. And it's nice to, like, when I was kind of catching the guys up on what you guys do, I was like, you know, this is craft. This actually is craft. This isn't, artisan Lay's potato chips. These guys earn the
Jack in the Box sandwich made with artisan bread.
Yeah.
Now, we'll see how you feel about that Jack in the Box burger about 5 hours from now. And you'll be fine with that artisan bread.
So is this a proper time to mention that you're from Texas and you've never seen Friday Night Lights?
We'll get to that, Skip. You know what? We're out of time.
That's the
producer signaling me that we're
That's the controversy.
Well, how many employees now do you have at Nika Sweeney?
So in Austin, Mike and I, who own the company, have two employees, my ex-wife and Mike's wife. We may be adding a new person soon, hopefully one we're not related to.
Okay. You got my number.
It actually helps.
In Nicaragua, in Esteli, we have 39 people now on the payroll. So 41 people in the factory with Esteban and I.
And Esteban is your master...
Esteban is a very experienced tobacco guy, tobacco pre-industry guy. He's great at managing. He's a great leader of people, and he's a great at managing the production process. I don't think any of us are master blenders. I think there may be maybe four or five master blenders in the world, right? Okay. Benji Menendez was a master blender.
Yeah.
Eladio Diaz is a master blender. We're cigar makers.
It's kind of like that term elite in football. You know, if everybody is elite, then...
Right. I think KitchenAid makes a master blender. But, right.
Okay, so it's growing.
Yeah.
And am I wrong that Esteban's... Someone that's related is working with Sokka?
Yeah, so Esteban's brother, Raul, just recently moved to NOXA, North American Tobacco SA, NOTSA. And they have to change their name because of the free zone. They have to change their name every 10 years, so they change it like a little bit. So right. I can never remember all the new names. But Raul is the... production manager at that factory, and which is where Sokka is working for his next. Hoy de Nicaragua makes Sober Mesa,
right?
And he's working with Raul, I think, to make sure that the next production is the same level of quality.
Awesome. Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you
just a little quick side note.
Sure.
Raul worked with me here in the United States for about almost 8 years.
Talking about a small
here,
world.
Here in Texas.
Well, that's so, how we met. That's how I met Esteban, is through Mike and through Raul. So.
Small world. Okay. Yeah. Cool. I did kind of want to talk to you a little bit about that transition, going from Texas. To pretty much your full-time resident over there. I mean,
yeah, I am.
You spend 90% of your time.
I make probably 10 trips a year back to somewhere, Europe or here.
Mm-hmm.
But usually it's not in Austin. So I get to Austin about maybe 10 days a year.
How was that adjustment going from Texas to basically this is my new home?
Well, there's a lot of things.
All the niceties of Austin,
right? So there was two things we realized early on. Mike couldn't do his job if he had to go down to Nicaragua all the time, right? And the factory just doesn't run the same if one of us is not there. And I realized pretty soon that there's everything that I need to do for RomaCraft, I can do from Esteli pretty much, but except for this kind of thing. But the factory doesn't run if I'm not in.
Effectively. It was a big deal. And Spanish.
Communication was a big thing for me. I didn't speak a word of Spanish. I mean, I spoke like cerveza, baño, you know.
Right.
But
Mazarrón.
Yeah.
Texas Spanish.
Yeah, I spoke Spanglish.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
I still kind of do, but like if it comes to accounting or the making of cigars or a grocery store or something, I know pretty much what I need to know.
Okay. Well, you know, we've been fans since the get-go. I guess you guys started with Intemperance?
Cro-Magnon.
Oh, was Cro-Magnon before Intemperance?
Cro-Magnon was the first cigar. Intemperance was the first cigar in stores.
Okay, in stores, Intemperance.
Yeah.
And I think that was the first one I actually sampled. Then the Cro-Mag and then the Aquitaine, which was a spin-off of the Cro-Mag.
Yeah.
Cro-Mag being a much more ballsy kind of step up from the Intemperance.
It's the exact same cigar. The Aquitaine and the Cro-Mag are the exact same cigar, just with two different labels. Intemperance is a medium to full-bodied cigar that doesn't have a lot of nicotine. So we have in our lineup, I think, pretty much everything that we need to smoke. So.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, you guys have, at this point, kind of got all palates covered.
Right.
I started, the Mode 5 was kind of my first go-to of y'all's sticks. I smoked the hell out of those. We've been smoking the Knuckle Dragger a lot. I got my hands on some slobber knockers. That was probably my favorite RomaCraft cigar, which I haven't been able to find since. And then, I don't know, maybe we could get our hands on some femurs for the show. We do a 5-hour show.
We're never making another
femur.
We did talk about making an Aquitaine.
Yeah. What were the dimensions on the femur?
10 by 133.
10 by 133.
It was never supposed to be smoked. It was supposed to be like the big bottle of vodka on the bar, you know, that you can admire, but yeah, you're never going
to
drink a whole bottle of vodka.
It tempts me to say, I want to really, I really want to do it.
A few people have tried, it didn't go
well. I've seen some half-assed attempts at getting through the thing.
No, but when we set out, we were making, you know, 2,000 cigars a week, nights and weekends behind Esteban's house. When we built the factory, I think we were up to about... 4,000, 5,000 cigars a week. And our goal when we built the factory was that we wanted to get up to about 1 million cigars a year, 1.2 million, which is about 20,000 cigars a week. And that's where we're at. So we're not going to be getting much bigger than we are now. So, you know, our goal now is just to continue to make good, consistent cigars and
now
work with the best retailers.
What's your distribution like? Is it nationwide?
Well, real quick.
Yeah.
I wanted to point out, because I love what y'all did initially, whereas you guys actually sold off your website as opposed to going out to, you know, Cigars International, Famous. You guys, you know.
Well, that was the use of Twitter.
Yeah. Well, that's all it was going to be. It was a cigar for my store.
To actually sell off your site. And use that as kind of a bridge to introduce it to brick and mortars, I'm assuming?
Well, Mike had Adrian's at the time, and Cro-Magnon became so popular, everybody's like, well, hey, why don't you sell some of those as well? And, you know, we just grew from there. I mean, we just kind of accidentally got into this, to be honest.
Well, happy accidents.
Yeah.
We asked our Facebook folks if they had any questions for you guys. Number one question you answered was, what's next? You got anything secret up your sleeve coming up? Or is it Maine?
Fable's the next thing we're working on from the factory perspective.
It's a box press, correct?
They're all box press, yeah. It's Pennsylvania Broadleaf. It's a great cigar. We buy the tobacco from AJ. He has a lot of really good Pennsylvania tobacco. But I mean, you know, as far, especially with the FDA changes and everything, you know, our portfolio is pretty much set. We've in the past had this brand called Craft, which is a cigar we come out with, you know, we plan to come out with every 2 years. We may be able to introduce a new Craft before the rules come down, but after the rules come down, I don't see us making new brands. I mean, I think we're just going to keep making what we make.
Well, like I said, I think you've got the palate covered from newbies to... heavy hitters,
right?
And it's working really well. What, you know, because we do get a lot, surprisingly, when we started this, I knew we'd get film folks that gravitate towards podcasts for the film talk, and because of that we talk so lovingly about our cigars, they want to kind of dip their toes in. Which one of your smokes would you recommend to someone who's never lit up a cigar before?
You know, it first of all, you know, what I would say is talk to your retail tobacconist. That's where you should start out, is go into a good cigar shop, talk to the retail tobacconist. He's not going to hand you a Neanderthal unless he's not good at what he does, right?
Sure.
Which hopefully that guy's not a partner with us. So, you know, go in. He's going to match you with something. I would say ideally start with a sampler, you know. Something, you know, in whatever size appeals to you in each of the lines, so you can kind of learn what the differences are. And then kind of hone in on it. Seasoned cigar smokers, you know, they're going to be able to find something good in our line that they smoke kind of at different times of the day, you know, when they want something small, when they want something big, something strong,
right.
Something that's just easy to go and flavorful. I usually start off the day with either an Intemperance Autopodaca or Connecticut. Mike ends the day with a Connecticut after smoking the Neanderthals and everything all day. So, you know, we do have a new cigar coming out for Europe. I don't like talking about it too much because then everybody's like, well, why don't you sell that in the United States? You know, there's an interesting thing where pretty soon you're going to be able to make cigars with Cuban tobacco, and those can't be sold in the United States. So, on a separate topic, yeah. We're making a cigar for Europe, and it's amazing.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Why don't you sell it in the States?
We make a new cigar for Europe called Wonderlust.
Good try, Ted.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I have something to say on that. I think Roma has done a really good job of building the kind of credibility on fuller, full-bodied, robust-type flavor cigars. We always talk about whenever a company comes out with something that's not at the same kind of level or par, people always go, oh, well, that's not as full or as strong, or I like the other ones better. And I think you kind of run the risk and it's a challenge to get guys to kind of understand the range of cigar making whenever a cigar is not necessarily as full. And so you kind of have to worry about the people who follow you, what they think of. You know, we make what we like. That's the end of it, right? But at the same time, there are people who are all over Neanderthal or all over Cro-Magnon because of the fullness that it brings to the table. You throw something out there that's not necessarily as full at right now, you kind of run the risk of guys going, oh, well, you know, it's just not as strong.
I mean, look at Saka, right? He came out with this. Everybody was expecting a Liga. And Sober Mesa is a first-class cigar. It's just not a Liga Bravada, right? So everybody's saying, hey, you know, when are you going to make a Liga Bravada? He's like, I already did that, you know, 15 years ago. So Wonderlust is, you know, I've smoked Cuban cigars, again, for 20 years, and I've always loved the aroma of Cuban tobacco, I don't believe that there's very many good Cuban cigars that have the same kind of fullness of flavor, not necessarily strength, but the fullness of flavor of Nicaraguan cigars. So
agreed.
In Europe, you have to have smaller cigars. You have to have cigars that are easy to consume. They don't attack you, and it's amazing how their palates are more, the consumer palates in Europe are more dialed into having super complex, nuanced flavors in a milder cigar. And I wouldn't say Wonderlust is a mild cigar, but it's an amazing cigar.
And this is the cigar we'll never get to smoke?
Well, I mean, you might get to smoke if you run into us.
If you go,
or if you come to Nicaragua,
the right places.
Or if you go to Germany.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, it's a great. I mean, you know, the embargo could end, you know, in a week. It could end in 10 years. Who knows?
Sure.
But
there's a lot of question marks in the industry.
Well, that's one of the things I'm kind of curious that cigar, at least American cigar smokers, aren't grasping is that from listening to you is that it's kind of like I see a lot of similarities between the craft beer market. Like I consider myself a Guinness guy. It's a low ABU, but it's still got a thickness and a creaminess to it. But there's times where I want a very hoppy IPA. There's times where I want just a straight, simple lager.
Right.
You have a complexity in your
sessionable.
Palate.
You want something sessionable.
Right. Well played. But you kind of go with your pick to whatever you're kind of feeling in the mood for then. And I treat the cigars the same way.
That's how it should be.
Yeah.
It, the days of somebody walking in and buying their cigar by the box, you know, to smoke constantly all the time, those days are over.
Yeah.
I mean, there's still those guys, but there's not very many of them. You know, why?
Right.
You know, we're drinking 8, 10, 15 beers tonight, and we're drinking, you know, a little bit of each one. So you get, you know, we're kind of going up the ladder, but, you know, you get the experience of you know, finding what you like.
Yeah.
And I'm the kind of guy, and there's a lot of guys like this, that would walk into a cigar store, pick up, you know, if you get the 10% box discount if you buy 20 cigars.
Yeah.
So you're going to walk out with 20 cigars. So you always pick up the La Flor Double Ojero, two of those. You always pick up the Padron 1926, two of those, because I can't afford any more than that.
Right.
You go pick up a couple of the Fuente, you know, Don Carlos or whatever. And then you pick up, hey, what's new? And you pick up 10 of something else.
Right.
And then, you know, eventually, you know, the Don Carlos just doesn't do it for you anymore.
Yeah.
So you know, the Oliva Serie V takes the place in your core of that.
Right.
And then you smoke that. And, you know, you go to an event, maybe you buy a box, but you stick that in your humidor. And then maybe, you know, every time you go to your humidor, you're like, well, I don't want that, you know, or I want something different. So you still, even though you have 250 cigars at home or 500 cigars at home, you still go into the cigar shop and pick up something else.
That's what's fun for it. I mean, tonight, I mean, you know, Ted and I are big box guys. You know, we've got boxes and boxes of our favorite smokes, and always great. 1970 being one of them. I mean, always got
great
a box
cigar.
Of 1970s. It's just my one of my go-tos. You with the F series from the Living.
Great cigar.
You love them. You just can't get enough of them. You'd mentioned briefly, I think a couple times, FDA has come up. I want to say, you named, you know, I know Cro-Mag, but the Intemperance.
Uh-huh.
It was named after the Intemperance movement.
Right.
You know, the resistance to Prohibition, Volstead Act. You know, we're kind of finding ourselves as cigar smokers right now in the same kind of boat where...
Like a modern temperance movement.
It is a modern intemperance movement.
Modern temperance.
Modern temperance movement.
Yeah.
Can you join the modern intemperance movement? Because I'd like...
Yeah, you just have to buy a intemperance cigar made by Roma Craft Tobacco.
Box, possibly.
And then fly up to Seattle and smoke it in
the
park.
Oh, don't get started on the Seattle trip.
That happened to me. Two bike cops kicked me out of a park. And there was group of guys at a table trying to sell me weed.
Yes, right?
By the fish market? At the end of the fish market?
Yes, it was.
That same exact thing happened.
Yeah, where that big totem pole is.
Yeah, that same exact thing happened to me.
Smoke coming out of his ears. Well, not smoke.
All you hear is don't go near the fish market.
I'm like, are you fucking kidding me?
It was unreal.
Yeah. Well, there's homeless guys over here jerking off. I can't smoke a cigar? No.
Yeah. How fitting is it that tonight we're doing this podcast is actually the 38th annual smokeout. The government trying to get everybody to wise up and
the World Health Organization Tobacco Free Day.
Tobacco today is the 38th annual smokeout.
Yeah,
light it up.
Where Washington bureaucrats wave. They put down their homophobic flags and their.
Of course,
and small business flags and their rights flags and everything else they're waving all day. They put it down for one day to attack us. Poor schmucks who just want to smoke a cigar, drink till we can't feel feelings anymore, and for one day we are looked at like lepers.
Always go with the Woody
Harrelson. In Seattle, and then it's every day.
Always go with the Woody Harrelson defense from Kingpin when he says you really shouldn't smoke, Mr. Munson. It's bad for your teeth, your lungs, quickens the aging process. Oh, really? Who knows more about it than the good people of the American tobacco industry? They say it's harmless. Why would they lie? If you're dead, you can't smoke.
Well, you know, speaking of that, you know, the reason why we're in this whole situation is our own fault. And when I say us, I mean tobacco, right? Not us, but...
Right.
You know, I think when Congress passed the PACT Act and gave the FDA authorization to regulate tobacco because it was consumed by humans, much like other products, they were really going after the fact that, you know, let's stop people from smoking cigarettes while they're in their formative years. If they choose later on to do it, you know, we don't like that, but we know if they don't start smoking between, you know, 14 and 22, then they probably never will smoke, so let's stop that. And, you know, the hardest place in the world to buy a pack of cigarettes if you're 16 is in a cigar shop. It's never going to happen, right? You're not going to be able to buy a pack. I mean, first of all, they may not even sell cigarettes. Second, if they do, they're way too expensive for most kids. And third, they're going to ID you. Absolutely.
Sure.
So, you know, tobacconists are responsible, and so that never was an issue for them. You know, when the state of Texas says you have to train everybody not to sell cigars or tobacco to minors, that's no problem for a retail tobacconist in Texas. They, you know, if they raise the smoking limit to 21, I think that's kind of stupid. But if they decide to do that, retail tobacconists will follow that law. However, when they said, "Well, we want to get rid of one of," you know, even though we're selling, you know, Boone's Farm Strawberry Hill, what, shout out to Boone's Farm,
there you go.
right here in Temple, Texas. A lot of good days on Lake Belton with Boone's Farm.
You had Lake Belton, Boone's Farm.
And back then it was also Barlow and James Wine Cooler and Zima.
Down the memory,
Jerry and Mad Dog.
The goal was to get the girls drunk, not to get drunk yourself.
That's where we failed.
That's where we erred.
The keyword on Mad Dog was not appetizing to females.
Yeah, exactly. The night train.
Their windshields in their cars.
Neither were we, as it turned out.
So my point is that they wanted to get rid of flavored cigarettes because all these fancy colored flavored cigarettes, well, except for menthol because that was political, right? But so what happened? The big thing was cloves because cloves are super carcinogenic, more than tobacco.
Right.
Which clove is not tobacco, by the way. So what happened? The guys at Cretec and all their ingenious. Said, what's the definition of a cigar? Well, it doesn't have paper. It has homogenized tobacco paper. So they started making Cretec clove filtered cigars. So then everybody else figured out, well, wait a second. Cigarettes have a higher tax than cigars. So let's go start making little filtered cigars. Well, then after that, all the people who should switch to roll your own to get away from the taxes, people started selling rolling your own tobacco, started selling it as pipe tobacco, which anyone who smokes a pipe knows it's completely different tobacco.
Right.
Right? So they started selling bulk pipe tobacco for people to make roll-your-own cigarettes. So then the people who regulate tobacco are like, you know what? We were gonna leave pipes and cigars alone.
You had to push us.
You know what?
Yeah.
We're no longer in the business of defining one product over another. So then all of a sudden you get electronic cigarettes and vape juices and so I'm of the school of thought that you should be able to consume. If you want to smoke crack, you know, enjoy. Hopefully you can find a craft crack producer
I see an opening here.
Become a connoisseur. But
I'm right there with you on that. Hey, yeah. You want it? Go ahead.
Exactly. You know, just don't hold me accountable for your bad choices, right? And then what happened when they started talking about regulating it? I think they were going to take a soft glove approach to it. But then you have all these in the tobacco business. So some people who make premium cigars also make blunt wraps, and also make black and mild, and also make flavored cigars, and also so everyone at the table had a different interest. And so then the industries, people in the industry, Dan Carr, rest in peace, decided that they wanted to use the law as a way to eliminate small people.
Competition. Yeah.
So you know what? Fuck those guys. We have a mountain full of cash, thanks to our loyal customers, and Michael Dell. Thank you very much. And so we will keep producing premium cigars and fighting that our cigars are a different type of tobacco product consumed in a different way by adults. And, you know, so it is what – I don't know what's going to happen with the law.
Nobody knows, but you're not – I mean, why stress yourself into another grade? But you feel confident that this – you know, whatever regulations come down, you guys are in a good position to keep doing what you're doing.
Well, we're a bastard.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
I was about to say, who knows?
Yeah, we'll figure it out. Let me put it this way. If the geniuses at General Cigar and Altadis can figure it out, we'll figure it out. We don't have the kind of money they have, but, you know, they're like a big oil tanker trying to turn, and we're like a little speedboat. We'll adapt.
Yeah.
But we're investing, and we're building our headquarters. We're doing everything, you know, assuming that as long as they don't completely outlaw cigars, which, by the way, if they do, we'll get your addresses and we'll just mail you directly from Nicaragua.
Sure.
Because the people in Nicaragua understand that the economy north of Sebaco depends, all the single mothers depend on paychecks. The only other thing that they could grow north of Sebaco that isn't cheaper than some Chinese imported product is hemp. And they're not going to grow hemp because then it opens the door to the narco trafficking. So, which is insanity in itself. But if they pass laws against that really seriously hurt the tobacco industry, the people who are going to be fighting for us are not tobacco giants. People who are going to be fighting for us are the people. Why are there 6 million Central American and Dominican kids lining up on the border to come across? Why is communism taking off in Nicaragua?
Will we take those refugees?
Why is there a new, social? Why is Nicaragua and Honduras starting to look like Venezuela?
Right.
And then hopefully they'll, undo their
stupid. Oh, right, our actions.
Yeah, we'll see. Okay. We'll see.
Okay, well, it's a weird time, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
we will be bootleggers if that becomes necessary.
I always wanted to be a bootlegger.
You mentioned that before. You and your damn Han Solo. Dear Han Solo fetish.
Love of smuggling. No,
and, you know, worst comes to worst, Mike and I have enough cigars to smoke for the rest of our lives.
I was going
to
say, at the very least, you're set.
Yeah.
Cody, real quick, what is this last beer we're doing? It's really good.
This is 512 Brewings.
This is the Double Pecan.
This is out of Austin. It's the
512.
It's got a name on it. A whiskey barrel aged Double Pecan Porter.
One of the best beers
you had
made
this
in the
on
world.
Tap at
I agree.
No, this is also comes in bottles, but it's only served in the Bombers, the large bottles.
You did have a Double Pecan.
They do have a Double Pecan, but this is their special
whiskey barrel.
They do with the whiskey aged. It's usually about a year, and they've been alternating between Jack Daniel's and or Maker's Mark whiskey barrels. So it is flavorful.
That's very good.
That's
very
never good. A bad thing.
No.
Which, by the way, liquid is different than tobacco. You know, you try to age tobacco in a whiskey barrel or a rum barrel, that's marketing, you know.
Tell us more.
It's kind of bullshit.
That's kind of the new, I mean, that's such a huge new.
Well, the way that the flavor gets into the beer or into the rum or whatever is because the charred barrel comes in contact with the liquid.
Mm-hmm.
When you put tobacco in a barrel, the tobacco just gets the aroma. It basically, dry tobacco is homogenous, hydroscopic, and it will absorb the air around it. So it will absorb cedar smell, or it will absorb Louis Trey if you're a Gurkha, or it will absorb. So it will absorb the flavor, but then it becomes flavored tobacco, right? Okay. Or it will absorb the hickory burning, the smoke from hickory in a fire cured type tobacco. So, but then it's a flavored tobacco, in my opinion. Not that that's a bad thing, but it's just not tobacco.
Okay.
It's flavored tobacco.
I was curious to get your take on the FDA thing. I've been avoiding it as long as I can, but let's go ahead and... tonight's movie on the TV here behind us is Friday Night Lights.
Booby Miles.
Booby Miles. 2004 was Friday Night Lights.
You want a good podcast? Put Booby Miles in.
Big Crit. Directed wrote by, a rap song directed about Booby Miles. By
Peter Berg, did he?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Maybe that's why I never understood
the
song.
Are you not are you equivalently uninformed about hip-hop as you are with Texas football?
My hip-hop is... I put my hip-hop up there with the best of them.
Okay. It's 80s hip-hop, but... Oh, yeah, that's mine.
That's you. Mine stopped around 94.
That's why I actually... One of the things I do like about the movie is the 80s soundtrack. Lots of Public Enemy.
Very good soundtrack. It was directed by Peter Berg, based on a novel by his cousin,
Buzz
Bissinger. Pulitzer Prize winning cousin, I believe.
Yeah. Two million copies of the book, so we heard.
I knew Mincy had read the book.
Mincy, you read the book several times.
Has a leather fetish with autoerotic masturbation.
Buzz does?
Buzz does, yeah. Just something to look into. Just a little factoid.
Keith Howell's going to be looking into that.
In-depth analysis of that. On that note, more beer down there?
So I graduated in 1990.
I was going to ask you, what made you pick this movie?
So I graduated in 1990 from Halton High School, which is a 5A school in Fort Worth. I played American Legion baseball, mainly college-level baseball. Mm-hmm. But in 1988, when this season actually happened, I was from 87 to 88, I was at Cal Fargo's Boys Ranch in West Texas. So it was a very small school, all boys. So they doubled the population of the school. That kind of made us a 3A UIL school.
Yeah.
So we played 3A people all the way from the very top of the panhandle down to Odessa, 3A schools. Right. Dumas, Dalhart, all the way over to Abilene. And then when I was a junior, I moved to Fort Worth and started going to school at Halton 5A, which is where we played, you know, these five big 5A schools. I was one of those guys that sat on the end of the bench. They threw in special teams to, like, take a huge hit. I remember being a 16-year-old kid, 15-year-old kid, getting into the pads, going out into a stadium with, you know, our stadiums were 13,000 people. This Odessa Permian Mojo had 22,000 people at a football game. We used to play a team called Perryton, and they had a guy named Mike McKinley that ended up going to OU.
Yeah,
and that guy hit me a couple times, and you know, that's all I needed to know about football. I was on to baseball after that. But this movie, so it was right kind of in that time when I was playing in high school, and high school football in Texas is it's hard to explain to someone who's not from here how much it means to some of these small towns. And I think this movie captures a couple of things. One, it captures that what football is to a small town, and kind of the pressure it has on the kids and to win and compete. But also, it's a story about Texas. And what I love, my favorite thing about this movie is at the end, they don't win. Not to spoil it, but
you just spoiled us.
Just like Hollywood, you know, the idea, you know, the Hollywood ending would be, you know, he barely makes it across the line and they win by a point.
And they should do that twice in here. The guy almost makes it, and then they get called back, and then he almost makes it again.
Right.
I really like that.
And that's real life.
Yeah, yeah, too.
And so, but.
My wife actually asked me why did they go the season before, because the next season they won the state championship.
Right. Well, the reason why is Dallas Carter.
Dallas Carter.
Dallas Carter is...
I was actually from Lufkin, and
Behind the pine curtain.
Behind the pine curtain. And the year
said a lot from now on.
The year before I went to, I got into high school, we played Dallas Carter. And so when they showed that up there, I was like, I was at that game.
Yeah, that's like playing the Dallas Cowboys.
Oh, and
they were humongous.
They did such a great job of talking about how huge these guys were.
They're fast, too.
You can't imagine seeing on the field and your football team, which you're looking at, thinking, oh, our guys are great, and they look like freshmen compared
to
these guys.
We went to...
It's like Navy football playing Notre Dame or...
The three of us graduated Temple, and our sophomore year, we won the...
We won the state title of the 92 football season. We played Permian and Temple. And I believe there was structural damage done to the stadium because they had more people than they could fit.
Temple was 5A?
Temple was 5A.
Okay.
And we beat Houston Yates.
We beat Yates for the title. We beat Permian in a regular season non-conference game. And they brought down, Temple has a big stadium. It held about 10,000. But there was structural damage done to it because they crammed about 12,000 into it. They brought the Permian people, which... had to be a long drive.
It's like an 8-9 hour drive.
They brought like 3,000 or 4,000 people. They took up like a huge.
The visitor side was. I mean, it wasn't just packed. It was.
They
beyond.
Basically cut the student section in half. Like I remember people on our side.
I know because we sat in the visitor section.
And it was insane because you would look around the entire stadium for that game, and there was no free space. They were stacked 10 deep. Even on the ends, on the end zones.
They had won the title the year before. So, the 88 seasons, what the book is based about. They won the state title in 89. And then 91, they had won. So when we played them in 92, I went out there in the field.
Well, I should mention, I did play football. Both Cody and I quit high school football your freshman year?
Yes.
And my sophomore year. We discovered this...
glorious substance known as beer. Known as beer.
So you played Thursday night football.
Oh, we played
JV.
I think you played Tuesday night football.
We didn't make it to JV. He played freshman.
It wasn't even just that I played. It was the first week.
Yeah, he really
failed.
Like, I lasted a year. I kept noticing Cody was having so much more fun. You know, rather than get up at 5 in the morning and.
He introduced me to this substance that we all know and love now as beer. I said, man, we can still experience the game, watch it, and love it, but then we can do other stuff and girls and all sorts of fun things.
Well, there isn't much to do in Temple in 1992.
No, there was not.
No, there wasn't.
There
was
not there in 2015.
Probably not much there now.
You do have those hot chicks from what is it?
Sonic
something, Tyson's Corner or something.
Tyson's
where all the loose women were from, or.
Why did we not know about this?
I've never heard of Tyson's.
Yeah. Damn you, wonderful elixir, damn you.
Well, apparently this thing didn't turn us on to all the cool stuff.
No, shit.
But no, that championship season, we did play a lot of those teams.
Played Converse Judson.
And this reminded me a lot of when we played Houston Yates for the championship. They were so much bigger. And their band was so much better with the dancing and the...
Dallas Carter was such a spectacle that year. It was my first experience into the Grambling style.
I thought this movie really captured just the Goliath, David and Goliath kind of.
It shows a lot, too, that high school football is so much about coaching and discipline.
One of the things that's kind of unique with small town Texas football, like my wife grew up in Dallas and Houston, so she's not...
She doesn't understand.
She didn't understand, or she just thought it was kind of amusing that the entire town closed down.
Right.
Businesses would, like, go to the football game.
Right.
And, we kind of grew up in that, so it was just...
The book really goes into also how, when talking about the 88 team, Bissinger obviously maybe had a clear moment when he wasn't wearing his leather and all asphyxiating himself, but he talked about how...
Or maybe he had his moment of clarity.
Maybe he did.
He was able to free himself from the GIMP suit to type a few pages.
He talked about
Get
how...
Get the GIMP.
He talked about how watching that Permian team practice and play, how they were like a machine. And it was just, they were, I don't know if they were just so afraid of making mistakes, but he said it was watching them. Yeah, they're normal-sized guys. They had... one guy, the kid that in the movie they call Preacher, Ivory Christian, was the only guy that ended up with a Division I scholarship out of this team.
Right.
And but he just said
the Mexican guy.
No, that was Chavez.
He went to Harvard but didn't play football.
That's right.
This was the real quiet.
Great choice, by the way.
This is the real quiet.
He ended up going to TCU, Ivory Christian.
But I
played high school with a guy, Kevin Fry, that also went to TCU and probably played with this guy.
We just talked about how watching them play, it was a machine, the way that they moved and the way that they would play together as a unit, even though they were smaller guys, not necessarily.
Am I the only one, though? And again, this is completely breaking format from our usual dissection of the film, but they really built that Preacher kid. You know, he was the quiet, you know, African American kid. He never saw his family. He never talked to anybody. They always tried to get him. They never explained his
why he was like that.
Yeah. Well, except for the very end when he was the one that.
Gave the
big rah-rah.
Sometimes books are better than the movie, right?
But. Well, and I hate to give the spoiler alert, but for people that haven't read the book or unaware, obviously it's a movie, so it's going to be Hollywoodized.
Sure. You got to make an entertaining spectacle.
Permian and Carter in 88 do not actually play in a state championship game.
Right.
They play in the semifinal.
Right.
And they play it on a rain-soaked Memorial Field in Austin, and the final score to the game was 14-9.
Right.
Well, that's not a movie.
Apparently, Permian was driving down to score the winning touchdown at the end. They ran out of time. I think they lost the ball on downs with about 30 seconds left, but it wasn't this high-shooting 31-34-28 game in the Astrodome.
No, but if I think if you took like what happened in the year later and 2 years, 3 years
combined.
Later, some of the characters like the what's the country music guy's name?
Country Western music
Tim
superstar.
McGraw right there.
Tim McGraw.
About to kick out the window.
Yeah, so Tim McGraw's...
Tuttle, did not know until tonight that's who it was.
Tim McGraw's character is six guys in one, right? I mean, there it was that guy, the helicopter dad, the football dad, like trying to live through his kids. And
that was one of my big... Well, for the pros. I kind of thought, you know what, if we're going to get this done quick.
Real quick, the real Don Billingsley, the kid of Tim McGraw's person, he actually, when the movie came out, like, complained. He said that this was total fiction, that him and his dad didn't have that kind of relationship.
Well, the whole town...
His dad didn't kick out the car windows. Yeah.
The whole town lost their shit over the book in the first place because of all the racism and everything else.
Well, it was looked at as an indictment of Texas high school football in general.
But it really was just, it was both. It was both the positive things and the negative
sensational.
You know, one of the other kind of aspects of this particular movie is the idea is how they treated the coach, right? Is you got this guy who's a real high performing coach. He smacked some kid or something, so he ended up having to take a lesson. He was headed for the pros, his coach, and so he went out to Odessa Permian
and in this season they
lost two games by 1 point.
Right.
And they were putting for sale signs in his yard and
I would have
running
loved,
him out.
They do the for sale sign, but I would have loved some of that backstory about how he had a trajectory to the pros.
You got to read the book.
Yeah, Bissinger described Gary Gaines. He said this was a good man dealing with an insane situation. That's how he described him.
When he described this, did he unzip his
mask? Probably to get that out of his mouth. Yeah.
I think the TV show that's also based on this idea.
Are you a fan of the show?
Is a lot deeper, more. It's a better.
They're allowed to go and do it alone.
I like the TV. The TV show is not based on real facts, but it's based on this scheme of high school football.
Well, I did like, you know, I was like tonight to speed things up. I was like, we're gonna do pros and cons. The biggest pro for this film, I thought Billy Bob Thornton played a really nuanced coach. I would have loved to have that backstory that he was headed for a college or a pro.
I'm a fan of Billy Bob's. I think he's a guy
too.
He's got a lot of range
but
as an actor.
But he did something with this. He did something with this, very well rounded, as opposed to like John Voight in Varsity Blues, who was this tyrant who, like a godfather figure, ruled over the whole town. The whole town was frightened of him. Or like James Caan's cardboard cutout in The Program. Remember that movie? It was just kind of this cliched coach thing. Whatever. I thought Billy Bob, you know, he's nice when it benefited him, and he needed to. To kind of be sensitive to get what he wanted,
but then he could turn into the Texas
football
coach. But then
he could turn into a screaming maniac.
He's calling the quarterback. You're the village idiot,
which basically makes him a parent.
Okay, real quick aside: top five coaches of movies all time.
Ooh, top five movie coaches.
How about Gene Hackman and Hoosiers?
I was immediately going to say Gene Hackman.
I was going to say Gene Hackman.
I got to go with Wilford Brimley as Pops Fisher from The Natural.
Yeah.
I also got Major League.
I also go James Gammon, Lou Brown from Major League.
Major League. Yeah.
Shut up, Dorn. Every time you play one off your hips, you owe me 30 sit-ups.
That guy's great.
Emilio Estevez, Mighty Ducks. No, I'm just kidding.
And that's all the time we have left for the 2 minutes.
No, but, you know, in a lot of young guys' lives, you have the coach, you have the drill sergeant, you have the, you know...
I thought that's what
the
Billy Bob
the coach
did well,
has a really important role.
Billy Bob showed how you can, if you need to, you can be the parent, the nice parent. And when crunch time and you got to really scare the shit out of him, he could do that too.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know where Gaines really failed, and this happened, this is a real aspect of the movie, is he was under such pressure to win. He had this guy who was ended up being probably a better running back than Boobie Miles would have been, but... He allowed Boobie Miles to come back and play, and basically today Boobie Miles is in, you know, Texas penitentiary, you know, in a white uniform until 2017. You know, he got an assault charge, and then he was on probation, and then he violated his probation, and now he's in prison. You know, so you know, that kid's life fell apart. I don't know. I mean, that kid was pushed through school. He never learned. He was just a football player.
I thought that was my second pro for the film. Boobie Miles. What's it? Derek Luke.
Yeah.
I thought he nailed it. He got the cockiness and the, for an actor that young to nail that kind of swagger to where when he has the injury to sell that kind of crushed disappointment on his face. I mean, they totally delivered it, cliched with watching
little,
the garbage
it was
man.
It was very
scoop out the Hallmark movie.
Very preachy.
But his face sold a guy who was facing something he never saw coming. And I will give a little shout out to our friend. We actually, his uncle, LV, played by Grover Coulson. Grover Coulson is an actor that we, right after Friday Night Lights, we cast him in a horror film we did.
Oh, cool.
And, in my infinite wisdom, riding off the high of Friday Night Lights, I cut out all of his scenes. The only actor that actually someone might recognize, I cut out all his stuff.
Yeah. He's better, by the way, in Anton Fisher.
Derek Luke?
You ever seen that?
Yeah.
No, that's really good. Yes. That's a much more developed character of that type,
too,
right?
Wasn't he?
Yes, he was Gabe.
Yeah, one of the
yeah, he played one of the...
I actually picked up Grover Coulson at his house in Fort Worth and drove him to
you
Temple.
You drove down Temple to film.
And so I asked him, I said, you know, he's a very nice guy. And it was just, even after this movie, he was still living in Fort Worth and doing community theater. And so I just said to him, because it was a year after the movie came out, I was like, I know you've had a ton of questions, so I'm going to apologize beforehand. I just want to ask you about Friday Night Lights. And so I asked him about everybody who was in it, and he said, you know, Billy Bob Thornton is totally cool. He said he's a guy who likes to have fun, but a professional. And so I asked him about some of the kids in the movie, and he had said that Derek Luke was a guy that really, really surprised him. As far as he didn't know that he was going to have the chops, but that Derek Luke really came through in a big way.
He did. He sold that character of Boobie Miles was, to me, maybe the best thing about the movie.
I also have to mention some other things that Grover Coulson said about some of the other people in there.
Sure.
Not
the time.
So I asked him just about some of the other kids, and Garrett Hedlund is the actor that plays Don Billingsley. And he had been in Troy with Brad Pitt. He did that movie Four Brothers with Mark Wahlberg. Uh-huh. I think he was in the Tron remake.
This is the Tim McGraw, country western music superstar Tim McGraw's son?
Yes. And he said, that dude likes to party. And I was like, okay, nothing wrong with that.
Young guy.
The funniest thing he said was the kid that plays Brian Chavez, Jay Hernandez.
Yeah.
He said, this guy was the Paris Hilton prima donna. He said he showed up with like a poodle under his arm and...
and I liked him in this.
Harvard.
Harvard, right.
I really liked him in this. But I thought Billy Bob did a great job, Derek Luke, and I also thought country western music superstar Tim McGraw did a.
I have no fault.
I thought he was Metallica's Lars Ulrich at first.
No, I think he was good in this.
I have no fault with any of the performances in this film.
He was so good, you didn't even recognize him, Ted.
I mean, some of the.
I liked Tim McGraw in this. I thought he was a poor man's Dwight Yoakam.
Yeah.
He did. He said, "Why didn't they just get
Abdullah Ablangata?" What was that, Sling Blade?
Sling Blade, yeah.
Well, I was like, if they cast Dwight Yoakam in this movie, when he was kicking out those car windows, it'd be those white boots he wears everywhere.
Just
look ridiculous.
There's definitely no problem with any performances in this movie.
No, the cast was for me the
some of the high school girls were kind of shallow characters, but
they were just there to serve.
They really
have,
were.
Like,
when she goes up to Billingsley, she's like, "I made the thing out of Rice Krispies. Do you like it? Do you like it?"
It's right.
Like,
"Yeah, can you make a touchdown, please? I'm not banging a dude that hasn't scored yet."
Yeah,
nobody ever made me a Rice Krispie kid. But then again, I was sophomore.
So wait a minute, I got a safety. Well, all right, maybe we'll just give you.
Well,
a
when I was
joke.
First chair tuba, I mean, they would come up. It was like,
what, was that?
Yes, they would throw.
Oh, is that? Were you in the band, or is that a euphemism?
I just thought the cast was by far the strongest thing about the film. They I didn't get any horrible Texas accents, which is the downfall of Varsity Blues.
Right.
I didn't. No accents jumped out at me.
Well, what's funny is that the quarterback kid, he was in. I didn't see this until actually. I'm gonna step on the grenade for you,
Lucas. Lucas Black.
I had never seen this film either until.
There he goes again.
And so the quarterback kid, I first saw him in the horrible, but the movie that I love, and it's a guilty pleasure, Tokyo Drift.
Yeah, yeah.
I always thought that movie,
Poor man's Fast and Furious.
Part 3 in the Fast and Furious series,
it is Fast and Furious, thank you.
That's when Vin Diesel was like, screw this for a while.
No, he came in for like 5 minutes in the last. But I always thought that was a fake accent, but apparently not, because the kid had that in the same...
One of the backstory things that I heard about this movie is Peter Berg's trying to get this movie made, and even though it was a bestseller book that was very highly regarded, getting a movie out of it, all the Hollywood people were like, well, they don't win in the end, and they were more in the Varsity Blues kind of,
surprised that they
more sex, more MTV kind of sex, drugs, rock and roll, and so Peter Berg had this brilliant idea to get all these Hollywood executives to come down in a private jet to watch a 5A football game. And they all planned, okay, we'll come down, but we're going to leave at halftime. And it was raining, it was cold, as West Texas gets in October, November, December. And by the time it was halftime, nobody wanted to leave, because they got sucked into it. And that was kind of how the movie got made, was, all these producers, Brian Glazer and all these guys really just got sucked into the movie. And into the idea of Texas football. So you really don't know unless you go to a Texas high school football game what this is like. And unless you live in one of these towns and you've got the Tim McGraw dad who has the ring, who won a championship 12 years ago, and he slaps his kid on the head with the ring every day, when these guys graduate, that's it. They're going to be working in an oil field.
That's one of the things that I think that the movie... I don't know whether the movie intended to go there, but I think that they got right, is that you have the alcoholic dad, you have the abusive dad, who's got this state ring, who's got the pinnacle of their high school.
How about the younger guy who comes up to them when they're out at like the Sonic or the outdoor hamburger stand? The younger guy shows him his ring, and he's got the wife and the kid.
Yeah.
He makes the same kind of comment. He's like, "Except one of these boys," and he kind of makes the same thing.
But
like,
in the end,
and that guy's like a loser. Yeah.
But in the end, exactly. In the end, what good is that?
The loser is the guy who drives by in the car. And he's all, "Billingsley party," and he's like, "Isn't that guy 35?"
That was you.
Now that's like
driving by McGregor High School later on.
That's like. That's like Dazed and Confused.
Did he graduate like 17 years ago?
All right.
I think the cast was phenomenal. I think because of how seriously this film takes itself, the football scenes themselves really are well done and executed themselves.
There's a little bit of guys looking like they got shot out of a cannon sometimes.
Hollywood. You weren't down there on ground zero on the football field.
They were dudes play Thursday night soccer.
When you get hit by Mike McKinley, you think he got shot out of a cannon.
There were dudes flying all over me at 90 miles an hour. That happened.
That wasn't football, though.
Yeah. The one thing I did
last night.
The one thing I did thought was overdone was the booby injury when he first gets his knee blown out.
Yeah.
That was taken straight from the program when Latimer.
Yeah. Skip, you seem like you're familiar with the book. You read the book?
Yeah. Okay, I read the book in 1990 while I was a senior in high school.
So in the real life version of it is that Booby Miles, actually, he gets injured. I believe they're playing like a preseason scrimmage.
Scrimmage,
He didn't even play in game one.
In fact, the guy who wrote the book, Buzz, never saw Booby play, ever.
And so they do this thing in the movie where they're afraid to put this Chris Comer kid in. And like you pointed out, they lost two games by a point apiece. They have him lose a game like 41-6 here. they put this kid in Comer, and he immediately was sprinting down the field scoring touchdowns, and they forgot all about Booby. And then in the movie, they put him back in at some point, and he immediately gets injured on the first carry. He was able to play football. They brought him back in for the Midland League game, and he had like 10 carries for 40 yards or something. He could still play, but he just was nothing like the same guy that he was. So they had to Hollywoodize that a little bit as well.
And this kind of goes into my criticism of the movie. I'm going to get shit for it. But I think because of how seriously it takes itself...
Be careful.
They chose to shoot this in a very loose cinematography-wise, a very indie film aesthetic, you know, a lot of in-and-out focus, roaming, realistic cameras.
I think the reason why they did that is because they didn't want to script the football playing. They wanted the kids to act.
It works so well with the football.
And
it
not
but
scripting
doesn't work
the football.
It doesn't work,
it doesn't
in, the
work
other.
In the home scene.
They just did exactly what you talked about because they just did the playoff montage.
Because
so they just went through five rounds of the playoffs.
It seems
to
me you do that indie film aesthetic with the camera. You have that explosions in the sky score of this kind of experimental, really good emotional score, and it's building this up to be this epic story. That's kind of this is something important, but you're building up the characters that are the exact same characters we've seen in every high school movie we've ever seen. There's drunk dad's kid, six mom's kid.
What about
kid
this?
Kid is so talented, you know his knee is going to blow
out. But
the scene that's playing right
but
now.
But isn't that real life, though? I mean, that's real life.
It is, and I think why...
Oh, go ahead, sorry.
I think why I'm coming into that thing is because, as Skip has chastised me for, I'm watching this after I've seen all the bad movies that have basically drawn on this movie.
What about the scene that's playing out right now, which is basically the rampant racism? I mean,
which by the way was way worse in the book. It was way worse. In fact, it was even against their own, like Booby, that they were talking about how, what do you do with a racehorse when he pulls up limp? You know, you just shoot him. Like they didn't, you know, one of the assistants' coach referred to him as a big O N-word, right? So that's even before you don't see the racism here until you start negotiating with Dallas Carter.
Right.
Well, this racism existed in that. By the way, still not completely.
Yeah. Oh sure.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Oh sure.
No.
But that was a big problem with you, and it was the racism.
I just this part right here
where the Dallas Carter folks
Freddie
are
James,
negotiating how they're going to do the play.
Freddie James was the head coach of Carter and kind of like a Bob McQueen type guy.
Bob McQueen was our head coach at Temple. Who
I think
won
he's still is he still the all-time winningest coach in Texas as far as number of
he's
wins?
He's up there, yeah, he's up there.
Bob McQueen, yeah.
He's up there.
So that when he's sitting here and he's saying, like, you know, how many zebras are going to be black? And Billy Bob Thornton says, well, I believe zebras are white and black. You know, I mean, I'm wondering.
That was obviously played up, but they underplayed the racism, I think, in the other parts. So this is where also we should mention that Mike Rosales is from Oklahoma. Went to OU, so obviously he knows almost nothing about football.
Sure.
So that's why he's
well,
left.
Nothing
the,
good.
That's why he's left the conversation.
Nothing good.
Should I mention that this year, by the way, our struggling University of Texas football team destroyed Oklahoma?
Yes, they did.
One of the guys that was on the Houston Yates team that played Temple in '92, Gerald Moore, who ended up going to Oklahoma and played briefly for the Rams.
Okay.
When they were they're in St. Louis
now.
This
would be a good interlude, Skip. What's your take on Charlie Strong and what he's doing in the program? I'm a fan.
I'm a huge fan of Charlie Strong because just like the coach in this movie, just like you know, the coach in the TV show, just like most
balancing
of the coaches
outside
we know,
in.
It's like first build a man and then build a man who can win at football, right?
He immediately came in and kicked like six kids off the team.
Who were the highest recruits,
yeah.
right? So that's, you know, I hope they give him a chance. I mean, these boot-wearing cowboy hat Cadillac Cowboys that
the
boosters
didn't want him there to begin with.
You know, they don't want him there to begin with.
Picture what this Coach Gaines in this film, you know, he's walking out of the grocery store and these two...
It's happening
was
right
it the
now.
Mayor?
It's right now.
Is that the scene? That's the scene.
Yeah, they just did it.
These guys pull up in a Corvette. Was it the mayor?
Yeah,
I missed
mayor.
That.
Coach, you need to win state.
Or else.
I'm not
saying
he's like or what, and they're like
he owns a car dealership actually.
It's like a scene out of Roadhouse, like where the evil developers are like
one of the greatest movies of all time. Yeah, nice you. Reference.
Yes.
Roadhouse. Skip, can we save our Roadhouse episode for next time you come?
Dude, I've seen Roadhouse probably
it's pretty sad.
70 times.
Yeah,
me too.
I was a bouncer in the
I was on a submarine. I was on a submarine in the Navy, and you know, we had only a certain number of movies. So we would watch the same movie over and over and over. Roadhouse was one of them. Yeah. one of the greatest movies.
Be nice. What if somebody calls my mom a cocksucker? Is she?
Yeah. I was a bouncer for 2 years in the early 90s.
And I was college, that guy. I was my Bible.
You know, there's a restaurant guy here in Temple, Ralph...
Chiffield.
Yeah. I worked for him as a waiter in a sports bar.
Really?
Okay. G. Willie's?
G. Willie's.
He is the grand inventor of...
I was a waiter at G. Willie's.
His daughter was in high school with us.
Yeah.
Ashley.
He is the inventor of the white wing chicken bacon wrapped...
Yeah.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
G. Willie's
also not a big fan of tobacco, by the way.
Well, you know, he is our. Oh no, he's not our state representative.
He
was our state representative.
So, like, here's one of the torrid stories of anti-tobacco. We're getting away from the movie, but we are talking about.
Yeah.
So, the Texas Restaurant Association was the biggest proponent of smoking laws in Texas forever, for 50 years, or 30 years, or whatever. And then what happened was when the municipalities started passing laws against smoking, the big restaurateurs in each big of the big municipalities started losing business for the cocktails, which is where they make the money, and the beer and the drinks and the wine to people who were in the suburbs, the restaurants that were in the suburbs that didn't have these bullshit smoking laws.
Right.
You know, because if you own a business, you should be able to decide smoking. Like, I don't have any problem with Starbucks. If they don't want smoking... No smoking. They own the business. They can do what they want to do. But when the government comes in and says it, and the Texas Restaurant Association fought it for years and years and years, but when Houston and Dallas fell and San Antonio fell and Austin fell, then guess who's the biggest proponent instead of the opponent of tobacco laws? Texas Restaurant Association. And leading the front is our friend Ralph. Just a little factoid about Texas politics.
Texas Monthly Magazine voted him the biggest piece of furniture in our state representatives.
He loved strippers.
Like, he didn't
know. I don't know if I'm blowing up into a scandal, but he loved strippers. He loved banging young cocktail waitresses.
Sounds about right for a politician.
Is that exclusive?
I think that's exclusive.
Yeah, Choosing That Square Club exclusive.
Yeah.
Man, let him and Buzz Biscuits loose on the town, and God knows what's going to happen.
Exactly. Otto, you'd be wanking off to a stripper.
We'll just step out of the way of those two.
Ralph's sitting there like he's a Buzz, like, hang on, I'm not ready yet.
Yeah.
I hate to interrupt, but is that pack full for consumption?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, I would love another one.
Yeah.
Yes.
Real quick, I've been lax. I've been into the conversation.
I don't want to let this go.
You're hanging on. You love
so
it.
So awesome. Neanderthal.
I was wondering about you because you, are a former cigarette smoker.
Yes, but I'm also a man of intemperance. So I like the when Skip first said we're gonna give you guys Neanderthal. Hold on to your. First thing Skip said is, I'm going to give you Neanderthal. Hold on to your balls. I'm like, okay, I'm ready for this to kick me.
I will say as
Mike was like, be careful.
It hits you in your blood. It's not harsh.
Yeah.
I mean, I think people confuse harshness with...
No.
That's my number one thing here is, I won't lie. Like, I'll say it every time. I see a dark cigar. I can drink beer. I will go out and find every dark beer you can...
Tactical Nuclear Penguin.
But when I see that dark cigar, I'm like, well, hang on a second. Let's take it easy here. But
ingenue.
Smooth. Everything, as you said, all the various blends that you put in here, it made a very tight, very easy profile.
That's high praise, because I mean, he's shit on a lot of
Didn't. I mean, normally I can.
That is one
of
the strongest
dark cigars
in the market. I mean, in terms of precision,
I get that, just this tingling sensation in my lips the minute I get it lit. Yeah. I'm like, oh my god, this is.
You know what that is, by the way? That's so. There's a process where you have to hydrate tobacco before you ferment it, because it's the pressure of the pilon. The lack of a better word is composting that happens, and you also have to hydrate wrapper leaf before you roll with it. And a lot of times in the water that they hydrate tobacco with, they call it the mojado or mojado. They put their own kind of recipe of stuff, whether it's, I've seen Dr. Pepper syrup, I've seen wine, I've seen, again, we're our own worst enemy, because when the FDA comes in, you know,
what
our
exactly are you
pure
doing?
100% handmade product.
Skip's got the 2 liter of RC Cola. Just
no, we don't. We
giant
don't
iron cauldron, and they're just stirring it.
No, but I mean, when you have to make 3 million cigars, you have to make all the tobacco taste the same.
Right.
So
exactly.
And sometimes, and you know, again, I'm not saying this is a negative thing. You know, if you take a chef who prepares something is going to take the same basic ingredients, and he has his own process of sauces or you know, condiments. I don't have any, you know, I don't have necessarily any problem with people doing that. It's when they do it in order to speed up the process to make tobacco darker instead of using thyme to make
dyeing wrappers.
Those kinds of things, you know, as long as consumers know that that's what's going on, sure. I don't have a problem with it. It's when they say that they're these master craftsmen making, you know, 30 million cigars a year.
Yeah.
You know, it's just bullshit.
Well,
you know,
we actually had a really
and it really, you know, always sorry.
That's okay.
I always refer to it as stolen valor, and I'll explain to you what I mean by that. So like I'm here in Killeen, right, watching a parade, right, and I see a guy in a Marine jacket with an Army patch and a Navy medal. And I know the guy's full of shit. I don't get upset about it. But I was in a submarine off the coast, you know, in air conditioning, running an engine room, a nuclear reactor. I wasn't like holding my head, my friend's head while his brain slipped out of his, you know. So if I had been that other guy, if I had been a Marine who had been in that situation getting shot at for 6 months or a year or three tours or whatever, or Vietnam, and you see this guy with that uniform, you get a visceral kind of emotional reaction of this guy's like so full of shit. He's like acting to be a war hero, and he probably never was even in the military, or he got kicked out of boot camp or something. Yeah. I see the guy and go, man, that guy's probably got problems, you know, like poor guy, you know, sucks to be him. But in the tobacco business, you know, when you see these guys who come to SLE, you know, once every 6 months or once a year, and they pick a cigar out of a lineup or whatever, and then they tell you the stories that they've heard from real cigar makers and about going out to the field. You know, they always take the same pictures, you know, in the field, smelling tobacco, you know. It's like, to me, that's stolen valor, and I get pissed off about it. I shouldn't get pissed off because it doesn't affect me, but I'm like, you know, I am down there every single day, right?
That makes sense.
When the water gets cut off, when you have to eat in the same bullshit restaurants, and, you know, I'm not trying to make it seem like it's anywhere like, you know, being in Afghanistan, but
sure.
I feel like it's stolen valor when you bullshit and lie about what you do and how you do it.
Well, you talked about also the
as long as you're honest, if you say, hey, you know, I like smoking cigars, I flew to Nicaragua, Pepin Garcia, who obviously knows a lot more about what he's doing than I do, made some cigars, I picked the one I liked, I'm a marketing guy, I put a pretty boxing band on it, and now I'm going around meeting people and selling it. There's three rules of the cigar business. Number one, four rules. Number one, don't make T-shirts in small and medium. Right?
You can stop there. And yeah.
No other rules are necessary.
Number two, it's all about the tobacco. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter. It has to be good tobacco. And people who smoke cigars on a regular basis will be able to figure it out sooner or later that you're full of shit. There's not very many business people in the cigar business, right? There's a few people who are real business people. And I'm not saying being a business person is better than being a tobacco person, but you have to have all those. I'm not a salesperson. Mike's a salesperson. Mike's a relationship sales guy who's on the road all the time. I couldn't do that. I can't stand in a cigar lounge and listen to a guy ask me about some mundane fact about tobacco. You know, what flavor notes do you pick? Tobacco. It tastes like jalapa. It tastes like... That's my notes. I don't pick up chicory, you know...
So we go into that
whatever.
Every week on the podcast.
Right.
Why don't we taste these things that everyone else is...
I'm picking up some dishwater.
I'm using Tom's of Maine Fresh and Gentle toothpaste.
Right.
I should be tasting
that's
these
true.
Things.
Hey, good call out.
Just a note on this, I'm still waiting to taste butter.
I tasted
the butter, damn it.
You're lying.
I smoke when I cook. Sometimes I get notes of butter. But then rule number four is everyone bullshits about something in the cigar business. Yeah. Sometimes people bullshit about everything, right? Like, you know, I'm not going to tell you the blend of the Wonderlust, right? But I can tell you I can't sell it in the United States, right? Right now. But when Cuban tobacco becomes available, which wrapper will never be available, when Cuban filler becomes available, we've made a cigar in our factory with Cuban tobacco for more than 3 years, a private label for a guy in Germany. But how do you know if it has Cuban tobacco? How do you know if the Cuban tobacco is pre-embargo? The biggest bullshit thing ever in the cigar business is pre-embargo. I mean, now there's a post-embargo. Yeah. At least that's honest, right? So, you know, everyone BS's about something. I mean, there's a thing that I learned out after the fact that it wasn't true when I actually started making cigars that, you know, long story short, people don't always tell you everything, right? And among us also, right? Everybody bullshits about everything because the FDA doesn't require to tell you the truth, right?
Sure.
And
I mean,
you know, and again, you know, you're our own worst enemy. Some people get weird about blends. Like, you know, if they tell you, you know, what's in the cigar. When I started smoking cigars, it was whatever was on the bottom of the box. This cigar was made in the Dominican. This cigar was made in Nicaragua. Yeah. And they didn't really ship tobacco from one country to the other very much. Then people started really, okay, the wrapper, filler, binder are different countries of origin. And then they started telling you, in the filler, you have Jalapa, Condega, Esteli, you know, Olor from Dominican. Now, you know, people want to know, you know, what farm is it from, and you know, is, you know, and so you can give the same exact tobacco to four different factories, and they're going to make four different cigars. So, you know, I don't really talk about blends too much anymore because primary reason is because I don't want to pre-influence someone's, you know, look, smoke it if you like it, buy another one, right?
Well, but Robert's thing was they don't want you ripping off their successful blends. They're
but see, that's impossible.
They're not going to tell you exactly what's in it because if it's a success, they don't want it to be copycat.
No. Look, AJ, Pepin, Nesser Jr., you know, the guys at Drew Estate, you know, I could tell you exactly what tobacco is in, where I buy it from, what kind of tobacco it is. I could have you look at the Buncher's package where they have the Secos, the Visos, the Harrows, and you could go try to replicate that. You might be able to get close, but at the end of the day, it's all the other things that make it a good cigar. It's the time we take. It's the buying consistent tobaccos. And you're not going to be able to compete with us solely based on the fact that you know our recipe.
You can give me the ingredients that Giada makes a casserole, but it's not going to taste like
I know
Giada's
every
casserole.
Single one of Emeril Lagasse's recipes.
Yeah.
They're in a book and they're online.
But it's not going to taste like his.
Yeah, I've seen him make it. I've seen his techniques.
That's a very good analogy.
I can't cook like Emeril Lagasse, right?
Well, my last con on this movie, I skipped some because I don't want to skip to bite my head off. The townsfolk.
By the way, we just finished Mocha from Southern Tier.
Yes, the Southern Tier Mocha.
One of my favorite styles.
I've never had that before.
By the way, I love this. I love this process that we're doing.
Don't expect this every week, pal.
No, I'm not. I love this whole idea. Where we're just kind of sharing them and
this
little
is the
samples.
Way it should be done. Southern Tier. The perfect environment here at TJ's in McGregor to do it.
That was the Southern Tier Brewing Company that's out of New York.
They make creme brulee and a couple other great beers.
Holy crap.
This
was their Imperial Stout. It's about 10% ABV. And it was, just as it says on the bottle, mocha. It, incredibly strong chocolate flavor. Delicious.
Oh, it's good.
Normally I have a problem with stouts.
Zebra.
I have a problem with stouts doing the coffee thing because it seems like a lot of the craft brewers, if you're doing a stout, it has to have coffee. And I'm kind of played out on the coffee stout thing. Holy shit, that was a good beer.
It's a great beer.
That was an awesome beer.
Well, and the one thing I will say about beer, especially if you're buying within like a can or bottle, small bottle, versus getting draft, or even in this instance where we're drinking out of a full bottle bomber, 750 milliliter, it really does make a difference because they're making that beer specifically for that container, that small. In this instance, the bomber, that beer is going to taste fantastic because it wasn't designed to go through a draft system.
No,
it was designed to sit in that bottle to condition itself. In some cases, to ferment longer within that bottle.
Continue the fermentation. Is that comparable to a Vitola, where you know maybe a Corona is what the blender, or you know, you wanted that taste profile, but you blow it up to a Churchill, and it's a different. It's not what we intended.
Yeah, so that's a great question. So there's there's two schools of thought, right? Davidoff is one school of thought, as an example. They blend a cigar. Whoever the Eladio Diaz, when he blends cigars, or Hinky when they blend cigars, they always blend the same size. And when they get a flavor profile that they like, they want every size of that cigar to taste exactly like that. So what happens is the proportions of the blend change, so that even sometimes the type of tobacco you use in the filler changes, so that every cigar tastes as close as possible to exactly the same. Our school of thought, which is kind of becoming more common, is we blend in a certain cigar. We blend fillers. When I blend, I have smoked thousands of 4x46 cigars that are just, you know, Esteli Lajero, Jalapa Seco, Condega Viso. And when we blend in a 56 with just fillers, because you get enough space in there to get all the components. And then what happens is when you put a wrapper on it, you figure out if that's going to work to balance out what you need. And then we make every single size in exactly that proportion. So even though we have, you know, six cigars in the Cro-Magnon lineup, all six of them are exactly the same proportions, but they all smoke differently. Whereas, you know, if you smoke a Davidoff Lonsdale and a Davidoff Robusto, they're supposed to taste exactly the same. Our knuckle dragger is going to taste different than our mandible, is going to take difference than our cranium. And so, you know, that's the two school of thoughts, I think, in terms of, you know.
I kind of like them both. I think they're both viable ways to.
I mean, you know, if you like Davidoff, if you like a Padron 1926, the idea is that you're always going to be able to find, if you're a petite Corona guy, you're going to get the same flavor as the guy who's smoking a bigger cigar. Our thought process is that if you smoke Cro-Magnon, you may smoke a bigger cigar if you've got 3 hours, and you may smoke a different kind of cigar if you've only got 45 minutes, right?
Right.
So it's going to be a different experience.
It's interesting because I'm a Davidoff fan.
Yeah, you've
They're
always
pricey.
Been, back in your days working at the...
Yeah, I actually worked in a cigar shop and smoke shop in Louisville when I was in college.
Oh, for Jay Fox.
Yes. I think he sold it.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Yeah. When I worked there, he owned it. Him and his wife owned it.
Yeah.
Jay and Wendy, I think.
Wendy, yeah.
John Barton still, I think, is part of that group. I don't know if you knew him or not. He was.
Yeah.
I always liked Davidoff, but this is killer.
I mean, Davidoff is probably the most, you know, kind of scientific / art balance of making cigars. I mean, Hinky and Eladio Diaz are, you know... Eladio is a master blender. I mean, he, you know, one of the best cigars I've ever smoked in my life is his birthday cigar. So, you know, you can't take anything away from Davidoff. I mean, it's a great, great company.
Let me move along real quick, because I know we probably want Skip to have some time here with the folks. The townsfolk were a big problem with me in this, because we're from a small town. The talk radio, where they were like, maybe these kids are spending too much time in class.
Completely realistic.
Too much learning. Too much learning going on.
The guy says, like, well, they spend all that money on that stadium. Shouldn't they spend in the school? It's like, well, stadium is part of school.
You might have a problem with that, but I've actually heard that on talk radio. You know what? I heard they were like...
Tuttle, was that behind the pine curtain?
No, I was actually here.
Underneath the tuba behind the
pine curtain. No, that was actually here in Central Texas, to where they were basically like...
The Temple High School radio guys are...
Hold on a second. Now that Mike's back, Mike, being from Oklahoma, what can you add to the football conversation?
Texas still sucks.
I knew that was coming. I saw that coming my own way. And I was going to say that the reason why I'm a fan of Romacraft is that you're Texas boys. Now I've got to reconsider that.
Well, you want to buy Ma cigars.
I think Mike can talk some shit right now since he's knocked off Baylor.
Well, hang on a second. Yeah, who just brought a whole shit ton of chicken fried steak?
A mountain of food.
Yeah, so why don't you think about, you know, retract your statements?
Boomer Center.
By the way, chicken fried steak, for those people who don't know, one of the greatest delicacies in the known civilized world.
It might be the greatest
world
Texas ever produced.
Some people call it country fried steak. Don't buy that.
No.
If it's not called chicken fried steak, don't buy it.
After country western music, I'll put this in there, because if you traveled around and someone sells you chicken fried steak, but then they ask you what kind of gravy you want on it.
Yeah, don't buy it. Yeah.
There's only one type of gravy that goes on chicken fried steak.
I gotta agree with that, man.
Is he a rich man's Travis Tritt?
Don't get set started on Travis Tritt. Interesting side note, I always try to inject a little personal stuff into this. Years ago, I was in HEB with my wife, and they had a cologne sampler thing out there, and they had Tim, a country western music superstar, you gotta say that. Tim McGraw cologne.
Hey, he's banging Faith Hill, so, you know, say what you want.
He ain't doing too bad for himself.
They had the country western superstar Tim McGraw cologne, and I'm like, oh. Apparently,
the next thing Faith Hill comes up on you.
I sprayed an obscene amount of his cologne on me. You think, free sample. I was not allowed to drive home with my wife. I literally stood in the HEB park. She's like, "You're not getting in my car."
Well, so
it's good enough for Faith Hill.
Look, let me just throw out a couple of things here. I like really expensive watches. You know, that's my thing. Mike buys $800 cologne. So
which
Mike
Tim McGraw
is
cologne is
it's not in that category.
Country western music superstar Tim McGraw was not an $800.
Mike rocks Tom Ford and Creed. And,
I think you actually got it free if you bought some HEB tamales.
There you go.
You got a.
So we're gonna say there's no sex panther in his.
Let's not disparage HEB tamales.
People person, he's out there selling. You got to smell good.
Mike, our gift basket tonight is country western superstar or music Tim McGraw
cologne. We're giving that out.
Not quite going to be up to your standards.
If you guys look under your chair, you're going to find a bottle of.
You get Tim McGraw cologne.
I think that's considered a terrorist threat.
I appreciate it. I like to re-gift those.
The stuff under your chair is the essence of Travis Tritt. Ode to Travis.
But what I was thinking about with those yokel townspeople, the guys that keep, I guess it's the mayor that keep cruising by, and they even stop into the coach's office.
They don't really
office.
Know who they are.
That guy owns a car. He owns a car dealership.
He's a big guy.
He's a booster, a football booster.
These guys are always giving the coach, you know, this is what you could do to increase your spread offense.
By the way, that's happening to Charlie Strong, by the way, right now.
No.
There's a redneck in a Corvette convertible.
You need to run the old cup.
Look here, I know you ain't from around these parts, but
zone read.
He's like, I won 22 out of 23 games at Louisville. I think I can do this without your AC
ass. You ain't never seen the wishbone like we used to run it.
When are we going to get another white quarterback, Charlie?
This is my question for Fred.
Forget the spread offense. It is the wing T. Three in the backfield, one split in.
This is my question for Skip.
Which, by the way, is why Jerry Jones shouldn't be running a football team. But
Don't get me started. Don't get me going.
Skip.
It's too late.
We're going to do a part two.
Skip, I'd like to hear what you think about my ownership.
Hey, you know what? It's your team. Do what you want to do. But I'm a Dallas Cowboy fan.
I'm
going to
blame myself of another one of these Neanderthals because damn it, they
everything
can't
you need. Everything you need to know about Jerry Jones. He thought Johnny Manziel was the best pick of the draft.
Oh, he still wants him.
He still wants him.
On the Cowboys.
He will win.
Still going to end up on the Cowboys.
I'm going to smoke Neanderthal with my Papa John's. I'm going to smoke Neanderthal with my Papa John's pizza, and then me and Johnny are going to go out for a game of catch.
You've never seen a ball like Johnny Manziel throw.
It's almost as pretty as a ball Ben Wheaton throws. He throws that fucking buck ball as good as you've ever seen it.
Well, he does have a domestic violence beef, so...
No,
that puts him on the radar.
Yeah, exactly.
That's
what they call street cred. I'm an unabashed Cowboys fan.
I am too, but I'm also real.
Let's take the thugs, I'm also the criminals. Who cares?
Well, you wouldn't have a 92 C, a 92
I mean, team. But I come from the era when we thought Michael Irvin was a bad boy.
Yeah,
you know,
he's a fun bad boy.
Yeah,
smoke some crack, as some hookers. God,
he hit people, but they were hookers.
Yeah, right. I mean, come on, he paid for the right to do it.
My question for Skip real quick, those townsfolks that swore, you know, they knew what was best as far as do this with your spread offense.
But there's cigar smokers like that, by the way.
That's my question for you. Is one of the reasons you stepped away from Facebook and certain things, there is a contingent of guys who think that they know a lot more than they really know.
No, absolutely not. That first of all,
are you just waiting until the political season is over, and then you'll
Why are you getting these
questions?
Mike
hates it when.
I have nothing to say on this topic.
Mike, it's a two-part question. my two-part question is
no comment.
Those guys,
people who have opinions about tobacco, I have no problem with those guys. I have absolutely no problem.
They think because they're on Facebook and they read a lot of things, they know a lot more than they really
I have no problem with those guys.
So are you stepping away from Facebook and things just until the next political cycle's over? Because, let me...
No.
You guys who aren't... Skip is very vocal
politically. And I, for one, love it.
Your marketing sales guy is like,
it's refreshing. But my
Mike's the one who has to go to an event and go, what the fuck was Skip's talking about on?
The second part of my question is,
he's got to deal with
anyone
it.
In your inner circle who's ever been like Skip, tone it down, or did they just
yeah,
know
like
better?
Every day, Mike.
Okay.
Yeah.
That answers that.
Mike,
question.
Skip, what the fuck did you post on
Skip,
Facebook?
Did you
why?
Lay off Facebook.
And you know what? It's never.
It's
by the way,
like Mayor Quimby, like yeah. Mike's laying go election November, election yeah. November, and Skip's
it's
all
never,
this stupid country.
No. Look, first of all, you know, look. It's never my post that gets me in trouble. Never.
It's your response to comments.
It's the troll. I have no ability to resist comment trolls.
You can't feed the trolls, man.
Yeah. I have very little patience with racism. Almost zero. I have almost no patience with people who use hyperbole and personalize. I mean, you know, politics now is a lot like football, bringing it back to the game, right?
As we have the dramatic ending scene right. Where they fail to score the touchdown.
Right.
Skip, the music's playing.
So you can have a guy who's born in Dallas, who loves the Dallas fucking Cowboys, right? Crazy Ray type guys. And then you got the guy who's a Steeler fan.
SEC guys.
Right? Neither one of these guys have ever touched a football in their life. Neither one of them have ever done an Oklahoma drill or know anything about what it's like to get hit by a brick wall, right? You know, these guys are so much higher level than anything I've ever seen, and yet they have a almost palatable hatred for the other team just because of the color of their uniform right. Or whatever, and they get into these arguments on sport. There's a great movie with Patton Oswalt about a super fan, the big fan or whatever, yeah. It's, you know, about the guy who basically shoots the quarterback for or whatever, you know. It's like these people, you know, it's like modern day gladiators. They get wrapped up, their whole lives get wrapped up in this, and they hate or they have this emotional, visceral response to another team. And there's people that politics has turned into that. Like, I'm a Republican, I'm a Democrat, I have a concealed carry permit, right? I used to carry a gun. I don't now because SLE is a whole different place, but probably should, but you know, I'm a big Second Amendment guy, you know, but I'm also a pro-choice guy. I'm also I don't get involved in other people's wars, you know, but I'm also a huge supporter of the military. And you know, I don't think there's anybody in politics that really represents every idea that I have. Obama's no worse than Bush. Was a great governor. When Bush was running for president, I thought Bush was a great governor because he worked with Bullock. Bob Bullock from the Democratic Party.
He's also a great owner of a baseball team.
Right. Well, he was a part owner of a shitty baseball team that now has done pretty well. But
we can go into the Tom Hicks or some other time.
But my point is these people come in and they make these comments like, you know, Obama's a dad, you know, and he's a guy who's any politician, by the way, is opportunistic, ego-driven, semi-dishonest, you know, about what they say and how they say it. You know, they don't say anything straight, because if they did, somebody would be pissed off.
Semi-dishonest.
Yeah, you know, I mean, maybe they're going to steal from a baby, but they'll figure out how to appropriate the
appropriate,
you know.
But what I loved about Skip was he would try his damnedest to counteract the trolls with, God forbid, statistics.
Right. So today Tom Mazuka makes an emotional comment about Social Security. So some troll gets on there and makes some comment like, you're an idiot, blah, blah, blah. Tom just doesn't respond to him. I don't have that superpower.
But Skip, I missed that. Don't go back, because I think it's healthier for you not
yeah,
to.
Is.
And I think Mike's off with it, too.
It's just moved to Instagram.
But you know, I love that you were a different political voice in the world. Because it was much more in line with where I come from on a lot of issues, and I understand why. You know what? Fuck it. I'll show you the great stuff about Romocraft.
By the way,
I'll show you what we're doing.
Yeah. So here's
I'm
what,
not going to engage you. Assholes.
Here's what it boils down to. I have a personal Facebook page. I have a personal Instagram. We have a company page, right? If you like smoking Romocraft cigars, then go to the Romocraft page. You'll find out everything you need to know. If you don't want anything about politics and you just want to kind of see cool stuff, follow Mike, right? I post personal stuff, right? Love me, you know, it's like the Kanye West song. It's like, you know, everything I'm not made me everything I am. Just like, you know, John Drew told me about that. And it's so true. It's like, you know, the reason why we're in the position we're in is because of who we are. But you don't have to agree. I don't have to agree with you politically to think you're a good guy, right? I
mean, right.
Unless you're like, you know, putting babies in an oven or something. If you're against handguns and you have personal reasons why, it's like, okay, that's a very valid kind of position. I'll vote. You vote. Whoever wins, right? But you know, sometimes it's like you know, I'm going to beat you until you agree with me,
right? Exactly. It's exhausting.
I don't blame you for bowing out.
You've got your opinions, but you're open minded. You'll let somebody have their own opinion, whereas other people, if you don't share the same opinion, they're immediately against.
Well, or even if you have your own opinion and the majority of people around you have a different opinion, you know.
Like
you're wrong, or you're in the minority.
And I don't like sheep. I don't like people who get sucked into this mainstream idea just because they're being manipulated, right?
Right.
Like, okay, if you want to be a refugee, it's super hard to go through that process, and it's probably going to be harder, yeah. Right? But the danger isn't from Syrian refugees. The danger is from the kid that grows up disenfranchised in the University of Texas who's actually semi intelligent, can lead other people, and then gets, you know, can't get girls, or and then he becomes radicalized by a mosque somewhere. I mean, it's not going to be some Syrian refugee who's actually running from terrorists that's going to be the problem. It's going to be the homegrown everyone so far and have been that's been led by these guys from Brussels, right? So, and by the way, you know, 2% of the people in America are Muslims. Right, you have a much better chance of being in a mass shooting and getting killed by someone who's not a Muslim.
Right,
right. But so that's what, to me, like, you know, I'm not religious one way or the other. But any time I see people kind of talking about race or religion or whatever, and just putting, it's like, you know what? It's because you haven't traveled. You know, everybody comes down to Nicaragua, and they see what they want you to see, and they see the poor people, and they. They're like, oh man, the great people making the cigars and the you know, I really want to help these people. And it's like, you really don't understand it. And if you were really, but by the way, it's a socialist country. It's not that much different than Cuba.
Well, no, I agree that once you travel and you expose yourself to different things.
Mike's like, why did we get into this conversation?
No, I was listening to the music in the background. He was just going on.
The music was pumping him up. It was the explosion in the sky.
Well, let me raise up the flag behind
me. Real quick.
Because I want you to be able to mingle a little bit here in the crowd. The last thing with the movie I wanted to point out was, in these movies, especially Varsity Blues, but even more so, there's this theme of legacy, of following your father's footsteps and all that. I know you've got two girls. Have they shown any interest?
No, absolutely not.
Absolutely not.
Absolute brilliance right here.
I was going to say, you know, the old school families, the Fuentes and the Padillas, like, have your girls shown any interest?
So our company...
I know your daughter interned for you.
Yeah, she did. She hated it.
She hated it.
You know, but... You know, she loved Nicaragua. She loved being down there, but she just doesn't really care about the... She might be a marijuana entrepreneur at some point.
This would have really worked if it was Varsity Blues, because I've been practicing my Vanderbeek. I don't want your life.
Yeah.
I don't want your life. I worked on it for a week because I thought...
Well, you know, Mike's son probably will be in the business.
Maybe.
And Esteban's two sons, he has three sons, but his two sons are working the factory every day, so...
Well, can I still use my... I don't want your life.
If we had watched that movie, we were going to be subjected to that?
Yes.
Ad nauseum. Dodge the bullet there, fellas.
Well, that's what you think. Joke's on you, asshole, because starting next episode, we're going to be doing a 5-part retrospective of Dawson's Creek. Get ready for that, boys.
Oh, God. If I just do that, yeah. You know what?
Let's wrap this up, boys. This is our first kind of on-location interview. I hope... I didn't know quite how to approach it. I hope you had fun.
Yeah, of course.
I hope it was more...
Can we talk more about politics?
I hope it was more Charlie... No, Mike said no.
I hope what was the second part of the question? He said it was two parts. Did he cover it all?
Yeah, he covered it all.
I covered enough. More than enough.
I hope I was more Charlie Rose than James Lipton. This wasn't some half-assed inside the Cigar Maker studio.
I don't know.
Skip, what you is your favorite curse word?
Cocksucker.
Good one. Mincy?
I also enjoy using the word cocksucker.
Cuddle?
Oh, fuck.
Fuck.
Did you ever watch that show Deadwood?
What is the
name? Oh, I did. Every other
word is cocksucker.
That's actually my beef with the show.
Your favorite curse word?
Fuck.
Mine's motherfucker.
Ian McShane.
You can't beat a good motherfucker.
Powers Booth?
I'm going to say just the word alone.
Just fuck alone.
Conjures
huh?
a power fuck. By itself.
Fuck.
I want to thank Skip for reaching out and extending. He and Mike.
Absolutely, man. Through. This was awesome to ask Skip and Mike here.
Hopefully you won't regret it too much in the morning, you guys.
we are seasoned professionals.
I also want to thank everyone here at TJ Cigar Lounge here in McGregor, Texas.
By the way, a great...
An oasis in the middle
it's
of...
It's an amazing cigar store.
I love this place. Yeah. Thank you to David, Derek, Ben, the entire staff. Everyone here is top-notch. If you're ever in the area, definitely stop by, kick your boots up, and have a smoke. Thank you, everyone, for... It seems long, but this is guaranteed to be the shortest... 2 hours.
Okay.
Still the shortest podcast in our...
It'll need to be edited before Sean Ryan can
hear it. No editing. We're doing this unfiltered.
We feel satisfied.
Normally, we just begin around introducing the movie about right now. Don't get used to it. Don't get used to this.
Gee, I really kind of like this.
Thanks to all involved.
Yeah, thanks, guys. This was great.
This was an education for sure.
We've got 8 more beers.
And we're not going anywhere.
And a lot of chicken fried steak.
So may the wings of liberty never lose a feather. See you next week.
All right.
To learn more about the time I drank so many pints of Black Metal Farmhouse Imperial Stout that I found myself traveling back in time and entertaining the youths in a Japanese internment camp with only my 3-string shamisen guitar and my dry Welsh wit. Well, actually that's about all I remember. There was a revolt of sorts. My shamisen and my plectrum were both covered in blood. There was screaming, lots of screaming. You know, the details are pretty fuzzy. As far as that particular trip is concerned. In the meantime, to learn more about the cigars and lounge featured on tonight's episode, you can visit www.romacrafttobacco.com and www.tjcigar.com. For more on O'Brien's Irish Pub, the live music leader in Central Texas, please visit O'BriensTemple.com and download their free smartphone app, where you'll find full beer listings including over 40 on tap, menu information, and a calendar of upcoming live events. To listen and purchase music heard on tonight's program, check out www.fritzbeermusic.com. Thank you for listening to the Tuesday Night Cigar Club podcast. This is Keith A. Howell saying, until next time, friends, unless we see you sooner at the pub. So keep it smoky, and for God's sake, keep it ballsy as well.